Ready to go.
All right, welcome everyone to this completely unnecessary podcast for Tuesday, June 15th, 2021, the last week of spring, alongside Ian Ferguson and his beautiful yellow-orange Luna shirt, two locations. I'm Pat Contry. On the show today, we have the E3 event. Woo! Who won E3? We'll also be talking about...
The fuck?
Well, exactly, Ian. We'll also be talking about, in particular, two of the presentations that tickled our fancy, as well as a physical company doing something weird, a physical game company, and then Patreon poll topic, maybe some voicemails there. Ian, how was your weekend?
My weekend was fantastic.
Okay.
Couple of good things happened. One, I had some friends in town. Hung out with them Sunday and Monday. It was Eric from Retail Archaeology and his director. I can't remember exactly what title he gives. Mark, but yeah, that was a lot of fun. Went to Seaport Village yesterday afternoon and really enjoyed it. I haven't been to Seaport Village in ages.
Did you do any shopping or just looked at the water?
Bought some hot sauce.
Okay, they have a hot sauce place?
Yeah, there's a hot sauce place there that I like. What are you doing?
Sorry, the audio.
So you shouldn't be watching something while I'm talking, Patrick.
I'm prepping something. I'm a prepper.
So anyways, yeah, got a bunch of good hot sauces. Went to the candy store, got some candy.
Took it to the candy shop.
I love going to the candy stores. And oddly, it's not nearly as... were you seeing Magic Stick?
What?
That was Magic Stick.
That was Fitty.
Yeah, Magic Stick is the name of the song. Awful fucking song. So it was good. It was wonderful. What did you do this weekend? I had other stuff I was going to say, and now I can't remember it.
Did you try a certain controller?
I did.
That was sent to us. Our fine friends at NX sent us some Retrobit controllers.
Yes, our friends at Retrobit sent us Retrobit controllers. That's the one that I messed with this weekend.
The Legacy 16.
I used
16.
It as a Switch controller and really enjoyed it.
It's a Super Nintendo controller that's either wired or wireless.
Yep.
Includes ports for both.
Super nice D-pad.
Not really
creaky.
Nice.
Very nice.
These are for pre-order. They come out in June and July. And then I'm definitely going to try. They have the Tribute 64 wireless N64 controller, which is a throwback to the old the Hori controllers, which are hard to get a hold of. And they had the wired one out before, I believe, but this is the wireless one. So, yeah. Check them out if you get a chance there. Also, real quick, because I delayed it from this week, and there's also a promo. So Video Game Years. First off, Volume 4 is out right now at ultimatenintendo.com. We'll get to the other plugs later. Look at that. You want one, Ian? You deserve one, Ian.
Sure.
We're on the back cover with Fabio from Iron Sword right there.
Yeah, there he is.
So this is your copy, Ian.
Okay.
Volume 4. I'll just charge you later. There you go, Ian. Take it. Take it. But next Monday, I put it off a week because I didn't want to overshadow E3 news. So the premiere of 77, the remastered version, will be on my channel around 5 or 6 Pacific time, about around 8 Eastern time, next Monday on the 21st. And from that point forward, it'll be one a week. It'll be the summer of the video game years, basically. We'll re-premiere. I'll be in the chat for most of them. Ian might show up and say hi. We'll see. And that it'll be some fun happening there. So what did I do this weekend, Ian, you asked?
What did you do this weekend?
I'm asking. I watched Streets of Fire on Netflix.
Ah.
So I saw Streets of Fire was a 1983 action musical sort of weird movie. It builds itself as a rock and roll fable. And I remember seeing a commercial for this about 3 or 4 weeks back during one of my Wednesday 80s commercial streams, twitch.tv/countrycode. And I saw this commercial for this movie called... Streets of Fire, and it looked bizarre. 1984 came out, directed by Walter Hill, most famous for The Warriors and 48 Hours, two outstanding movies. And this came off almost directly off the heels of the huge success of 48 Hours with Nick Nolte and Eddie Murphy here. So this was produced by Lawrence Gordon and Joel Silver, the Joel Silver you hear about, famous producer, and starred Michael Paré, who was also in Eddie and the Cruisers, and not a huge amount else. I think it was in the Philadelphia experiment.
Don't even know what Eddie and the Cruisers is.
Those were like early 80s movies.
Oh, okay.
But it had a really strange cast. Amy Madigan, Rick Moranis, Willem Dafoe is the villain. Bill Paxton has a small memorable role because he's awesome in everything.
Yes.
And then you have a, I mean, 18-year-old, almost unrecognizable because she's so young, Diane Lane in it.
Mm.
So it's like, this movie is insane. It's like the 50s, like you got 50s cars and looks, and it's like a grimy city set that they built to look like, I think they built it to look like Chicago because it's like an L line, but they filmed it in LA, which is one of the reasons why this movie went over budget, according to the story. It's like, no, Walter Hill didn't want to shoot in Chicago where you can get that look. You want to shoot in LA for some reason. So they built these sets that are like full streets. You know, you're building everything here. Then there's a dance sequence by the stand-in for Jennifer Beals in Flashdance, the girl that actually did the dancing. So it's like, wow, okay. And somehow it's PG, but there's a little bit of nipple. I don't know. The PG back then, you can still get away with that stuff. Either way, it's a bizarre
PG
movie.
PG led you right up to hard R in the...
Yeah.
For a
so
while
there's
there.
Some eye candy in this. There's some action. Walter Hill did this. I read it. He wanted to do a comic book style movie, but hated comic books themselves, like the character. So he wrote something like campy, and the action is over the top, and the characters very stilted dialogue, and that's the problem with this movie. It's on Netflix, so check it out. It's bizarre because like the direction is really good, set design, the actors are in it are like all really good actors, but the script is terrible.
Oh,
script
sure.
is bad, and they realize it while filming. They knew it. They're like, oh, they're like into films. I look at the stories like, yeah, when they were filming, like, ah, we'll worry about the script as we, I'm like, no, you don't ever put the script aside. As they're filming, they're like, yeah, this is going to be bad. They knew it. They couldn't stop it. And they realized also, unfortunately, they were not in love with the leading man, Michael Paré. Supposedly they tried to get Tom Cruise and a couple other people that were unavailable. And he did a good job, but like he didn't have like the full charisma you needed for this role. And they wanted to make this like
you needed a full flavor charisma
to pull this bad script up from the fucking gutter. And they planned it to be a trilogy originally. They were doing like Indiana Jones type. They were going to do like multiple movies with this guy, and it just didn't work out. Unfortunately, it wasn't the right fit. But he wasn't bad at it. But like you needed someone like a full movie star power to make this memorable. So why do I bring this all up? I had no idea. It's one of those today I learned that this was the inspiration for one of Ian's favorite games, one of my favorite games, Final Fight. I had no clue.
I always knew that. But I've never seen the movie. I know more about it being the inspiration than I do the actual movie.
It has the gritty scenes of like the towns. There's a subway scene on the subway.
Mm-hmm.
More importantly, the main character looks just like Cody, and his name is Tom Cody in the movie. So it's like, yes, that's okay. And he's an expert with a knife. Like, so it's like, yeah, they just took it wholesale. And Diane Lane's character, she's a singer, gets kidnapped by the evil gang called the Bombers, and she's wearing a red dress. So it's like, they weren't even pretending. Nice. So it's like, it's so weird that, I guess, like in Japanese culture, they latch on to these things that were failures here. That like, oh, this is cool. We love this, and we're gonna make like a game kind of off of this. And from there, there's not a huge amount of similarities after that. But the character even has the same part in the hair. He looks just like him. Look up Michael Paré in it. He looks just like Cody. I mean, he looks just like him. And there's also there's a cop character. He's not corrupt though. But his name is Eddie. So they even took that for that boss, where it's Ed. Yeah. Or whatever. Yeah. So they even took that. So, yeah, there was a lot there that was similar. He doesn't pal around with a ninja named Guy, though. There's no guy that looks like Mike Hagger. But, like, it's Cody. It's him. So, like, it's interesting that, yeah. I wonder if Streets of Rage took some inspiration as well. But that by then you already had the beat-em-up genre being fully established. But maybe.
Right.
You know, maybe.
Also, it wasn't called that. It wasn't Streets of Rage in Japan. It was Bare Knuckle.
Okay, so I was saying Streets of Fire, Street Rage, but yeah, the whole movie is fascinating. I looking into the backstory of it, and plus the music's actually pretty good. There's a banger in the intro. Basically, there's like music videos throughout that are a part of the movie, so it's not really a musical. It's like there's a stage show in the beginning and the end. There's a stage show in the middle that they work in, and there's so like that's how they work in the soundtrack. But so that's why it's like called a rock and roll fable. So yeah, check it out. It's on Netflix. While you still can watch it there. The budget was $14.5 million. They went way over budget and only grossed $8 million. Wow. So huge failure. Huge failure. And that's 1984 money. So you have to, like, you know, double it at least.
Yeah.
So, yeah, check it out. It even has a couple of Deborah Van Valkenburgs in it, who also worked with Walter Hill on The Warriors. She was the girl from that palled around with them. So that's why I like Walter Hill. He always has his minor character actors, like, show up. He rehires them. And like, he did the same thing in 48 Hours. There's like, I think when I talked about 48 Hours, there's like four Warriors actors in 48 Hours that show up even for small parts, a couple of them. It's like, there you go. Yeah, you treat him well, Walter Hill. What is he doing nowadays, Walter Hill? Now I'm like super curious. I'm like fascinated by this guy now, having the balls to do this movie. So yeah, check it out. It's the inspiration for Final Fight, but there's not it's not a beat 'em up movie though. But there is, you know, there's fight scenes in it, a couple of fight scenes. So that's what I did. Well, the ding means we got to talk about Simpsons Arcade 1-Up being announced, Ian.
Is that what it means?
That's what it means.
That's what it means. Yeah, so that's a big one that I think a lot of people were looking forward to, especially because it was obvious that Arcade 1-Up had the Konami license. I mean, they've been working with those properties previously. They did the Turnage, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle.
How does that fit on the marquee? And that's a long name.
What? they did the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles cabinet. So I think a lot of people were secretly hoping that we would get the Simpsons Arcade one. As people have corrected us over in the past, it was briefly available, I think, on the 360 and maybe the PS3s.
Whenever I say download. It didn't come out, I mean at the time.
No, I know that too.
Because I can bring up the shitty, they try to do the, I think there's the rare DOS version. That's not what I mean. When I say that this stuff didn't come out, at the time, you could not get the game. That's what I mean.
Yeah, this seemed like it would have been an ideal, port for the system.
Super Nintendo.
At the time.
Genesis could have handled it.
But yeah, people brought up the fact that Acclaim had the Simpsons. It was probably a weird licensing thing, which is why it never got made. Anyways, here it comes. There it is.
There it is. And it's great. Baby Blue. The best arcade games are Baby Blue cabinets. This and Popeye. And Simpsons might be in my, if you twist my arm, might be in my, make my top 10 arcade games. Definitely top 20 if you had to twist my arm. So 30th anniversary is this year. My God, man.
We're not getting younger.
No word on, I guess, it's not like there was a bunch of Simpsons arcade games you can pack in on this thing. So, like, I don't know what else you can potentially get on this or what else they could potentially include. But I think just by having this alone, people want this. Just by having this alone. This is such
I think this is a standalone. I mean, they've done some standalones before. I don't think we're going to get a whole lot more on this because Konami did this one. And, like I said, a lot of the console games were... LJN, Acclaim, they were all different companies. So they can't necessarily... They could, but I don't see it being as easy as it was for the Marvelverse, the Marvel Capcom machines, sure. To just go and grab the Super Nintendo ROMs and throw them on there as a bonus.
Plus, almost all those console games are not all terrible, but most
no,
of them are
all,
not.
No, they're all bad.
There's some that you can play, but like they're not to the same caliber as this. This arcade
I love game. Virtual Bart, but it's fucking miserable. They're all so bad.
The Dream one isn't that good. It's very problematic. Obviously, the NES games are all mediocre to bad. So I tried to really... I think my review was at Bart versus the World Radioactive Man. One was like, okay, this is decent, but it's still not a good game. So like this is like you couldn't top this game. You can't. It hasn't been topped. You know, And it was pretty early on. I think this is like second season. So like they had some of the characters, not all the ones you know to love, but they still crammed every character they had into this game, even as a minor. Like they did as much as they can with the IP. It was brilliant, brilliant game, brilliant game. So that was I guess right before E3 kicked off. That still kind of counts as an E3 thing because Arcade 1-Up was traditionally at E3 showing off stuff. Then our pals at Limited Run, hit it once for posterity. Had their little quirky presentation they've done for the past, few years now. They've done, like, a little quirky green screen thing. And pretty impressive list of stuff. We're not going to go through every single one if you want to go off a couple of highlights, but there's two in particular we're gonna zone in on. But you got Double Dragon stuff. You got River City Girls, a few different things.
The River City Girls stuff is really exciting to me. We are so much living in the era that beat 'em ups have really seen a revitalization. So River City Girls was great. It's getting a sequel. I didn't see a whole lot about it, but it looks like there's two new main characters. And then the And I didn't know this. I can't pretend to even know this. But apparently the game that River City Girls was inspired by was a one of the Kunio Kun games that was released in 1994. They're doing a full English translation of that and calling it River City Girls Zero. And it was a beat 'em up, kind of like River City Girls was now. It kind of flipped the script on the... it wasn't Ricky and Kunio rescuing girls. It was them rescuing.
So they had they did it back then even. Yes. That's interesting. And then a couple others. The Takeover, my pal Matt McMuscles, his beat 'em up game is getting a physical release on Switch and PS4. That's pretty
James
cool.
Epic Game Music did a lot of...
oh, he did?
Did a lot of music okay. for that, too.
Got the Canadian connection. And then our pal Mike at WrestleMania Wrestling... that's coming out for on PS4 and Switch in physical form. So
I will definitely grab.
We have a cameo in that. Yeah,
I'll grab a copy of that. I was really hoping for a physical release of it, which is why I haven't picked up the digital yet. So I will definitely.
So that's a good one to get.
Yep.
And then now the two ones that were mind blowing for different ways. One, I actually knew about both of these. I was under Friend EA. The one I knew about for a couple years that I couldn't wait for this to happen in the works. Castlevania Rondo of Blood. Because the first one I told Ian, even Ian was like, what's the big deal? A Turbo Duo release. Let me repeat that. A Turbo Duo release, meaning this is a physical game for the old Turbo Duo / TurboGrafx-16 CD system, if you had the upgrade card, because it's
important to point out that it'll work on the PC Engine, too. There's no region locking on the CD.
They didn't have region locking because you couldn't get a burner back then for under fucking thousands of dollars. So this is really cool. And this is going to be the English translated version. So it's really the first time we're going to be able to see this on, back in the day, we didn't have an English translation to play back then. So this is really cool, obviously, for a couple of reasons. It's cool to have a game like this in a translated form on an old console. But Konami now, this is like, lubricating the Konami a little bit to open up with some of their TurboGrafx, maybe IPs potentially. No, hey, there's a might be a
don't
market
use
for this.
The word lubricating
I know.
With your hand motions.
Okay.
Yeah, this is great because Konami has the IP rights to all of the Hudson stuff. So a lot of the very expensive games, and not even just the expensive ones, but a lot of the greatest games on the PC Engine TurboGrafx were obviously the Hudson properties. It was like their first party, kind of like it was like the equivalent of the Nintendo released games on a Nintendo system.
Sure.
So not only is that open up the possibility of re-releases of games like Bonk 1, 2, and 3, all of which, well, except for Bonk 3, are fairly easy to get. You could also potentially see stuff like Sapphire. Sapphire was Hudson. Sapphire goes for $1,000 right now. And there are tons of bootlegs out there.
I have one within reach. What happened to it?
It would be nice to get, to be able to get an official re-release of it.
Yeah, there's a bootleg right here in my hand.
The other thing that I love about this, and...
I have the real one, by the way, so don't yell at me.
That I wanted to point out is this takes that fucking shitty, crappy... scam fucking PCE Works company and spikes them into the fucking dirt where they belong.
Oh, I hope so. We never really talked about them before how much they annoyed us.
I fucking can't stand them. Bullshit. Just bullshit artists.
Because they...
Oh, we put like $10 of fancy craft paper and shit in this, so we're going to charge you $80 for games we have no rights to.
Yeah.
Eat shit.
They try to come off like they are... Not saying they do it on purpose, but they try to... skirt the line. Oh, this is kind of official because
no,
of the
it's
quality.
Not. I don't think they try to do that at all. I think they just try to hide the fact that it's bootleg by covering it in fancy arts and crafts nonsense.
They hide it.
We'll give you a fucking foil printed box.
Sure.
It's dog shit. So I'm really happy to see this.
And they say for the love of it on their site, fuck off.
Yeah. Obviously they don't have access to all these rights, and I'm just positing and guessing here. But if they're doing one Konami re-release. There's always the potential that they could do more. And Konami's got the IPs for a lot of the most popular PC Engine and TurboGrafx
but
stuff.
But getting official re-released, potentially, TurboGrafx / PC Engine games is very exciting for someone like me. And that's because I love the console, because you're resurrecting interest more. We saw it with the Mini. The TurboGrafx Mini, already like a year ago, year and a half ago? A little over a year ago, we're trying to resurrect interest in this console more and more. And this is the first step. So good on Limited Run for... getting Konami Greed to do this. Now you go out and buy it to make sure that it's like, okay, there's a market. I think this will sell, though. And obviously most people that are going to buy this aren't going to play it or potentially won't. They're just going to collect it. They're either Castlevania fans or game collectors. That's fine.
And I'm both. I already have the Japanese version. I've had it for a while, but I'll get this version.
Get the translated version.
I will support the shit out of this. I will open it. I will play it. It's not going to just take up space on my shelf.
There you go. So that's great news there. And then we have a re-release of a 3DO title, an esoteric title that our pal James brought to light in popularity in an AVGN video. Plumbers Don't Wear Ties is getting released, I guess digitally as well. It's going to come out on PS4, PS5, Switch, and a PC re-release. So it's funny that's going to show up on Switch. Yeah, that's just a weird one. But hey, whatever. People like it, they'll buy it. It's like, yeah, go for it.
It's funny that it's funny that they did it. I have no excitement over this. So.
It's a bunch of still images. There's some nudity in it. It's really just campy and dumb. It was in that era of right before full motion, you know, video of games and stuff. And it's like,
yeah, someone told me that basically, like, this isn't even like an FMV game. This is more of an interactive PowerPoint presentation.
Yes, they just shot stills and be like, okay, here's the story. It's awful.
Oh, I'm sure
it's awful. And it's like, you don't even buy for the titillation, because I understand it's not like it's filled with nudity. It's like a, like, choose your own adventure, just like weird fucking story that they like probably thought of and did like in a weekend. That's how bad it is. You know what I mean? Like, that's what it is. Yeah, we can do it and come out on the fucking 3DO for it. So, yeah. I'm looking at one on eBay, a free control pad with the purchase of this game. You mail away and get a control pad to wear your Plumbers Don't Wear Ties on there. So there you go. Really bizarre. There's memes about it now. It's not something that you should miss in your lifetime. Just like UltimateNintendo.com, you don't want to miss that. You can get the Not For Resale Blu-ray, the brand new Volume 4 Video Game Meters that I gave Ian. Throw it up, Ian. There you go. It's not even on screen. There you go. Volume 4 DVD on my site. You got T-shirts. You got RBI baseball stickers. You got certain Super Nintendo and NES guidebooks. Don't mock that DVD. That's not a sponsorship. That's a review copy. You got to do a YouTube video now.
I was in it. I'm not doing shit for it.
And, of course, I'm on Twitch every Wednesday night, twitch.tv/ContraCode. And cameo.com/PatContra. I got to do a birthday thing later today or tomorrow for someone. So that's what's happening, Ian. But E3 is fully upon us. We're gonna talk about...
Upon us, it's over.
Well, it's still going on, I think, day three. Did Nintendo just close it out?
They've got, like, I don't know, 2 hours of fucking...
bullshit. So, okay, we're going to run through E3 minus Nintendo. That'll be a separate topic, and as well as one other standout with their 10-minute presentation. So they started with Ubisoft. When did it start? Friday or Saturday? I watched some of this. I missed the Rainbow Six Extraction stuff, but that's the next Rainbow Six game. I always liked the Rainbow Six series. You know, I haven't played it in forever.
So my coworker was watching this as it was going down on Friday, and I think she said that there was, like, aliens. Oh, yeah, co-op action horror spinoff of the popular Siege game. So Rainbow Six with monsters.
That actually sounds very interesting.
That could be interesting.
Because the thing about Rainbow Six I always like, it's one of the only shooters that's somewhat realistic. You get shot in the head once, you're dead. You get shot in the chest a couple times, you're dead. So that could be... interesting, where you have to be tactical and be careful, and you know, I'm kind of down for that. Why not? Because everything's done zombies and monsters the past years, all the Call of Duty shit and Black Ops and everything. So okay, why not? So okay, so I'm looking at the footage of that right now. Looks like it's in San Francisco. It takes place, and then they still have the Tom Clancy name in front of it. I just think it's funny. Rest in peace, Tom Clancy. They still got his name in front of all the games. So there was that. Anything else for Ubisoft? You got the Rabbids, Mario plus Rabbids sequel. I saw that. That was looked amusing. I had no experience with the original.
The first game is fantastic. It's essentially XCOM Lite with Mario and Rabbids. It's extremely funny. It's a great game that a lot of people still refuse to play because, I don't know, they're dumb. Play it. It's great.
And then they had an Avatar game, and I did watch the trailer of that. And people looked excited in the chat for, you know, because... for a movie that's now 12 years old.
I think people really
years,
kind 10 of
years old, 11 years, 11 years old
sometimes for these things. Who the fuck is actually excited about an Avatar game?
It was the biggest movie of all time. I mean, like,
yeah, that no one talks about anymore because it wasn't good.
It was fine, Ian. Everyone saw it. It was a new. They're coming out with three sequels. They're finally making them now. I don't know. It's like, I don't know how you make the movie that far in between, but you know, and everyone's coming back from what I hear.
My understanding was that it did well because it was the right movie at the right time
3D.
For the brief 3D craze.
Yeah. For the 3D thing that they tried to push for like 2 years. And I was like, at the time I was like, this is going to fail again. But I saw it in 3D. I saw it with Frank, you know,
I never saw it. My grandmother liked it.
See? And that's why it's a successful. If Grandma Ferguson likes it, it's a good movie. Everyone's going to see it. There you go. And then you got Xbox plus Bethesda, because now they are joined together in a huge deal. Starfield.
Joined at the butts. I think Starfield looks kind of interesting. They didn't show a ton about it, but I like space stuff.
It'll be what I hope Star Citizen was going to be. Probably.
I didn't see a lot of comparisons to Star Citizen, but I mean, it'll be a good big space game, I hope.
Yeah, that's what it's going to be. It's going to be a big space game where you can do whatever the fuck you want. That's my dream game, always.
I liked how the design of it, the sci-fi looked. I don't want to say like classic sci-fi, like it wasn't Outer Worlds, but it wasn't. I enjoyed the look of it.
It takes place in, it's our reality, right? It's not like another galaxy.
I believe it's our reality. Yes.
Okay, so that's closer to Elite, basically.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like a privateer. They can't think of their own races and lion people, whatever the fuck they are. Kilrathi. See, I know my stuff. Is it Kilrathi? I think it's Kilrathi.
They also showed some Halo Infinite stuff, which I don't know. I've talked about it a bunch on here before. I feel like I need to go play. I really need to go give the Halo games another try. I know a lot of people didn't seem particularly excited about the Halo Infinite reveal stuff last year. I don't know if people are more excited about it now. I don't really have a whole lot to say about that, but that's obviously a bigger one.
Starfield says it's 25 years in the making, by the way. Which is interesting.
It's not 25 years in the making. I was reading
it says that in the trailer.
Yeah, it was. I was reading it. It's literally, I think it's like Bethesda's 25 years old. That's
a brand new universe, 25 years in the making.
It's not actually 25 years in the making. I read the article. It's clearly, I don't remember exactly what it means, but it's just a tagline. The game has not been in the making for 25 years.
So what the hell? That's a horrible statement.
Yes, it is. It's a very stupid statement.
You tricked me, Bethesda. I'm thinking that this was, you know, someone's
dream.
Did
you think a game was actually 25 years in the making?
You can jot down notes when you're a 10-year-old. Now you're 35, you're making a game.
Okay. All right. That's a stretch.
Don't ruin these people's dreams, Ian, out there. You have 25 years to make a game. You can do it. Or to write that novel or whatever. You can do that. And then there's a Chernobyl game, which I know nothing about, and I don't care. We skipped Forza Horizon 5. I don't know if you're into the Forza games at all. Racing, no, not really. Okay. Square Enix showed off the Guardians of the Galaxy game, single-player game, where you got the squad. And I guess it's, you know, it's a Marvel game. And I love these Marvel games because they have to change the characters so much not to look like the actors. Like they did with the other Marvel
It's extremely jarring. It makes them all look like dollar store replacements.
Yes. So like Peter Quill looks nothing like Chris. What the hell's his last name? And then Gamora. They look more with the comics. Like Drax looks more with the comics Drax because he's actually green. And then Gamora looks like probably more like the comics one. But even Groot, they had to change a little bit, and Rocket, they changed just enough, but it's a raccoon. It looks like a raccoon. I just think it's funny. I have no interest in games like that, though. But, yeah, some people were complaining about, why is it only single player? You only can play Peter. It's like, well, it's a story-driven game, probably. So if they write for one guy, it's easier. I don't know. But I'm surprised it's coming out now, though, in between movies. That's kind of weird timing for it, because that movie's not coming out till like another 2 years. They still have to film it. Because it got pushed back, and then with the pandemic and everything, and then they fired the director, now he's back. So it's like, yeah, it's going to be, I suppose it's going to be the last time we see Batista, unfortunately. He's like, oh, I've been doing it for like 10 years almost, time to go, I'm getting older.
Yeah.
Good old Batista. By the way, we got to watch that Zack Snyder movie with him in it. We got to watch that at some point.
I'll get to it.
We got to do that. And then Capcom, Monster Hunter, You're That Guy. And Resident Evil Village, that's basically what they showed for the most part.
Yeah, I heard Capcom's showing was a little lackluster. I can go over the Monster Hunter Stories 2. I was going to cover that during Nintendo. Monster Hunter Stories 2 looks great. I don't know that I will immediately go out and get it simply because my recent track record with playing RPGs for longer than 10 to 15 hours is not great. But if you've ever liked Monster Hunter but didn't want to get into the, you know, the action online grinding game that is the standard, Monster Hunter Stories 2 is more of a traditional JRPG with turn-based battles, but it brings in all of the crafting and all of the monsters and all those familiar things from the mainline series. It's adorable looking. It looks really pretty for a Switch game. Switch games can look good, but I'm just saying it looked better than I would have expected it to look. I would like to get to it at some point. I don't know when I will. But people seem to be excited about it. Monster Hunter is always popular.
Okay. And then a couple other little tidbits before we get into the main meat and potatoes of what we like, or in terms of what you are, our faithful audience likes, as well as me. Back 4 Blood, which is kind of, I first heard of Left 4 Dead, Back 4 Blood. It seems like it's the same developers that did that. That's why.
Yeah, it's not Valve, but it's the same people. Yeah.
Okay. That'll so that's cool, though. At least they're like, okay, we want to do what we want to do. It's sort of an unofficial sequel. But yeah, I'm all about that, where you have, what is it, 4 people fighting off zombies. So that's pretty cool. It's like squad-based with different things each person does. I like stuff like that. I like the collaborative stuff. Diablo 2 Resurrected.
Oh, very excited about that. Me and our friend Tom are very, very pumped for that one. I will definitely be playing that come September. The beta launches in August, and it looks great. It looks like Diablo 2 with a fresh coat of paint, and I think that's exactly what people want out of it. They don't really want any changes to the gameplay. Square Enix had some announcements. Honestly, nothing looked particularly great to me. They announced Stranger in Paradise. What the fuck is it called?
Final Fantasy Origins Stranger of Paradise.
It looks really, really basic. I know that the main character wants to kill Chaos. That's what everyone has talked about. It just came across as very bro-y, very basic, very generic dude running around in a t-shirt. Nothing particularly special
they
there.
They have spiky hair?
They also announced another... They're redoing Final Fantasy 1 through 6, what they're calling Pixel Remasters. But I was looking at some comparisons of the sprites, and they still don't look as nice as just the Super Nintendo sprites. I don't know why they don't just use the Super Nintendo sprites for the Super Nintendo games and redo the original sprites in that style. They did new sprites that look not... They look better than those iOS and Steam re-releases of 5, 6, and Chrono Trigger that they put out that we talked about. The sprites just looked miserable. But they still don't look particularly great.
I think we're skipping some of the stuff from Microsoft because I remember some other stuff they announced. By the way,
yeah, go back.
All these games obviously are going to be exclusive to either Game Pass or the Xbox console, which is really Game Pass, or both. That's huge news, obviously, for some of these big games like Starfield, because when they first said, "Oh yeah, some these Bethesda games will be on their systems." No, they're too big. They pay too much money for these studios. They're not. Sony is not going to get these games. But they're just not. So a couple of them I think we missed out on, maybe.
I don't know. I still think a lot of it's going to be timed.
Ooh, I don't think so. I think Game Pass is going to take over, which we'll talk about in a second. Stalker 2. Oh, Age of Empires 4 is coming to Xbox Game Pass. So they talked about a lot of the Game Pass stuff that's coming.
The new Age of Empires was interesting.
Flight Simulator is going to be on Game Pass in July. There you go. Tons of people played that during the pandemic. Hades, Game of the Year, one of the games of the year, right? That's coming to Game Pass. We got a Psychonauts 2 launch date. That's right. I remember they announced that last year originally, I think. And then a bunch of other stuff. Elder Scrolls Online. There's a lot of stuff now, obviously. Far Cry 6, I think I saw the trailer for that. That looks interesting. At least the story does. You don't really see gameplay in these trailers. They've got a lot of stuff going on. So real quick about Game Pass. So this news sort of dropped right before E3 about what Game Pass is coming to. We have to just touch upon this, because this is a solidifying Game Pass as like going to be the future, like Netflix of gaming. It's going to be what Google Stadia thought it could be, potentially, but they didn't have the games, frankly, and they didn't have the infrastructure that Microsoft does. So the
big difference is Game Pass lets you download the games. It's not just streaming.
Well, not just two. Not two. Plus, it's
that's a huge factor in it that can't
be overlooked. Plus, you have a console attached to it that you can play them on as well. That's so you have the horsepower to do that. So,
I mean, if it's streaming, it's no different than what Stadia is doing. It's still being played somewhere else.
Sure, but you're in the infrastructure. You're in the ecosystem.
Okay.
So you gotta be contrarian. I'm trying to just transition you. Anyway, so the big news is that it's also gonna be coming to iPhone. So that's really fucking interesting, man, that they're gonna bring it to iPhone and that Apple, they worked out probably some sort of deal.
I think they had announced their intention of doing that when Game Pass was announced. It's this next part that's really interesting to me.
Smart TVs.
Yeah.
It's gonna be they're trying to build it in as an app. So when you buy a smart TV nowadays, a lot of, like, you have to have apps made for these smart TVs, and they're not always compatible depending on the age. They're like smartphones. They can be too old. They're like Android based or whatever. So, like, you know, Disney Plus and Netflix and Hulu and all these and Prime are apps that come with TVs. So the fact that they're developing this for smart TVs is going to open up this to everyone who has a TV potentially, except for Sony probably won't allow it on their TVs, but everyone else that makes smart TVs. You potentially can have Game Pass ready to go. So when you boot up your TV, oh, there's Game Pass. They'll probably have a fucking trial attached to it, probably. Hey, if you don't have it, you can try right here. Either way, that's gigantic. That's a huge audience right there that you can tap into without them even realizing that they might want to get Game Pass. Or it's just convenient for people to be like, oh, I can just play it on my TV app without having to jump through hoops. Or, you know what I mean? Like, it's just another avenue to do it easily.
It's cool. I think that's going to help it do better than Stadia. I don't think it's going to magically fix the problems of Stadia, though. I still think we're quite a ways out from having streaming be a truly viable replacement.
Sure. But Microsoft, they got the games. They got it long term. So,
yeah, the thing that'll be interesting to see is if Game Pass ends up being less of a rotating showcase. I mean, I think it really needs to be able to do that before it really takes off. Putting a game up on launch and having it up for 2 months is great, but, not everyone's going to want to get to the game right away. And that is the thing that they do with Game Pass. Games get put up and taken off of Game Pass pretty frequently. So I think the library would have to be more consistent for it to really, truly be a replacement.
Yeah, but for the cost, I don't think most people mind. I wouldn't if I only had 2 months
to play a new game. No, it's fine. I'm just saying it's not perfect. There are issues with Game Pass.
Well, otherwise they got to charge you probably $40 a month, which no one would do. If it was going to be available forever, they got to pay the people making the damn games. They can't give it. You can't give the store away. That old expression, right? So no, but that's interesting. So that's a heavy blow. The combination of that. I'm not saying Sony's going away or PlayStation's going away. It's not, but they're really now going to be entrenched with a lot more people potentially. Microsoft with their basically. Basically transitioning to basically being a software company the past 3 years or so, saying, yeah, software was what matters, hardware not as much. And it's starting to pay off. It's going to start to pay off.
Yeah, I don't think that's a bad way for them to approach this stuff. When they realized that Sony was more or less eating their lunch in the hardware department, they were like, well, let's go out there and gather up as many properties as we can and find a different way to put it in people's hands as opposed to always requiring the purchase of a system.
Yeah, it's like, everyone has a computer. Why not play our games all on the computer? Yeah, why not? That makes perfect sense. Who cares what you play it on as long as you buy our software? Why not? Why not, Microsoft? Microsoft being reasonable for a change there. All right, anything else before we get into the big boy of E3 in our minds?
I think in most people's minds, even skeptics in Nintendo, people who aren't fans of Nintendo realize that Nintendo had a... there was a good chance going into today with the dearth of... The lack of real announcements from the past couple days that Nintendo was potentially going to come out of this looking the best. And I think they did, despite the fact that they didn't announce a lot of things that people were expecting.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
And we're going to transition now to that next topic for you on YouTube that you'll see maybe a little bit. But all right, Ian, Nintendo pretty much capped off E3, I think, for the most part. Almost last in the docket.
Bandai has a thing, or their thing is happening now, but that's it.
Okay. Well, we'll pay respect to whatever Pac-Man announcement they have and whatever else. But right now, or whatever mappy compilation pack that they're going to come out with. But right now, we're talking about Nintendo E3. They had their event. We watched it live. I watched it on Twitch, and there was some surprise announcements. Our pal Chris Kohler had his list of wants, which was funny because none of them got hit. It's like N64 on Nintendo Switch Online and, you know, Earthbound and all these Mother 3 and all this stuff. It's like none of that got hit. From the top, though, I'll say is that they brought back a lot of things I thought that, like, people are like, that's nice to see that again. It was like a sort of a fresh surprise to see a few things like, oh, look at that. Now I want that. Thanks for thinking about that. Which we'll get to.
They brought back a lot of stuff. My main takeaway without announcing talking about anything directly is that they did bring back things that people wanted to see come back. Mm-hmm. Nintendo has far more things in their past that people want to see again than I think anyone realized. And that's how I felt when I came out of it. I was like, wow, that was pretty good. And it wasn't until I looked online and saw all the things that people also wanted to see that were missed. And it's like, okay. And this is, we kind of touched on this with the new IP, Nintendo needing new IPs. I love to see new IPs. I love to see new creative ideas, but Nintendo's back catalog is just loaded with shit that people want to see come back. And there's no possible way you're going to get all of that announced in one E3.
They don't got the manpower to make all those games. To work on 20 different, you know, IPs at once from different, like, it's just, you're not going to get that. But so the one thing they did not touch upon, they didn't even hint at it, Switch Pro.
Nope.
They didn't hint at it. So the way Nintendo likes to work this stuff, they want to make sure they know what's happening. Things are secure probably before they say, okay, we're definitely going to get to it. It's a little bit too early probably for that still. So I have a
theory on the Switch Pro that we'll get to when we talk about the last thing they showed.
Okay. So we're trying to do that order. Okay. I'm trying to get in the order. What's the order that they showed it?
We don't have to do that. So basically if we can just talk about this right from the get go, they did finally show some more footage of the Breath of the Wild sequel.
Yes, that capped it. It's like one more thing, and then people got disappointed. There's really two more things, and then they showed the Breath of the Wild sequel.
Teaser. I don't know, you know, what the original timeline for that was supposed to be. Obviously, you know, the pandemic took a toll on production schedules for things. But it says that it's coming out in 2022, and if I was a betting man, I would guess that they will probably launch a Switch Pro around the time that comes out.
Okay, you're now on Pat's side about 2022.
For that, I mean, well,
it makes sense.
Earlier in the year, I thought there was a possibility that Zelda might be Christmas 2021.
It makes
my whole thing is that
it.
It's going to come with it, it's going to come out with these newer games.
It makes sense to bundle it. It's going to be 5 years. It's going to be 5 years. The Switch is coming out next March already, and why not re-release it with that? You know. Breath of the Wild. Yeah, because you have the more powerful console. I'm sure Breath of the Wild 2 is going to require a little more horsepower. You're now in the sky. You can fly around and go up and, you know, be on little islands in the sky and stuff. Not there's tentacles coming out, and there wasn't a huge amount there that you could really glom onto in that trailer, but it's a teaser. It's early.
Showed some new powers that looked like they were based off the powers that, you know, he gets in the first Breath of the Wild, with like they showed the magnetic or the spiked ball rolling around and stuff.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. It looks like, you know, more or less a direct continuation of the type of gameplay you saw in the first one.
Let's talk about what they showed. First of all, they led off with the Smash, one of the final Smash DLC characters.
I'm actually happy with that character. It's one of the few Smash DLC characters that I've truly been happy with. I love seeing the fighting game characters from other series come in. I've always been a Kazuya fan in Tekken as well. And Nintendo's getting good at slightly trolly things. They really started it off great with, they don't show you who's carrying Ganondorf's body up the mountain. So I think people thought that they were going to be starting off with Breath of the Wild 2 information. Because until he throws them off the cliff, it just looks like a Zelda cinematic. So the trailer keeps showing him carrying people up to the top of the cliff and throwing them off, and ended with something that I thought was truly funny, him throwing Kirby off the cliff and Kirby simply floating back.
Yeah, it was cute. And he just murdered all these characters. Not murdering
Kirby.
Kirby
never dies.
Can't kill Kirby, but he killed everyone else.
That's Sakurai's game. Sakurai, and Kirby is Sakurai. He's not going to let that happen.
If you're not familiar with the character, Kazuya is like the main character of at least the first couple of ones, right?
Jin and Kazuya, I would say, are the two main characters.
And he's like always. Okay, he's not the one with the fire powers. He's the other one, right?
No, he turns into ogre.
Okay, and yeah, I never used him in Tekken, but you know, it's nice to see them acknowledge that you had Terry before. You have Ryu. You got some of these characters coming in, and Tekken's a pretty gigantic.
It's franchise. Huge. Yeah, so, I mean, like, it's one of the biggest fighting franchises out there right now.
Yeah, so it's good to see. And even the people, I saw less bitching about this than Terry, thankfully. I'm sure people are still bitching about this. But no, it's nice to see that. It's nice.
What I loved about this announcement, too, was that it wasn't even remotely. I don't think anyone, as far as I could tell, I don't think anyone had Kazuya on their list of potential characters. There's always the ones that people go back to. Crash and Lloyd from one of the Tales games. There's always these characters that people constantly bring up that they're certain are going to be added.
They're certain.
And this guy was, to me at least, Kazuya was just out of left field. But it makes great sense.
Yeah. Plus, it's easier to incorporate. You have fighting characters that, you know, actually fight. So it's nice to see the combos and things like that they already worked in. They already had them all worked out. So I'm like, oh, this is great. Yeah, I mean, I'm not the prime audience for this, but, you know, I can picture people being happy with this that are into Tekken. Then you had a Metroid game announced, which was great because I love this stuff that no one's thinking about this, and they dropped this on us.
So Metroid Dread was originally, I guess it was first talked about in like 2005 or 2006, and it was canceled. And this seems to kind of take the original idea of it and bring it back. So it was interesting the way they started with the, yes, they will never, ever, ever announce anything as far out as they did Metroid Prime 4.
Never again.
Never again. Every time they bring it up, you can see the pain and the hurt in their face that they ever
brought it up. And that's it. More information, like, next year. They're saying, yeah.
They immediately brought that up, and I was like, okay, they're just getting that out of the way first, and that's it. But then, holy shit, we're getting a new 2D Metroid.
Yeah. In the first one in almost 20 years. So, the first new full one, obviously, the Metroid 2 remake. But the first, you know, fresh.
I think
one.
They're counting since Fusion or something like that is what it was.
This article, yeah, first they're counting. It's also a direct sequel to Metroid Fusion. Okay, concludes the 5-part saga. Yeah, Metroid 5 came on screen.
Yeah,
and people were like, Metroid 5. They're like, oh, you're skipping. Some people didn't catch the announcement that it's not Prime 4. But then, because it opens with a CG of like, you know, full 3D. But then it switches to 2D. Everyone's like, oh my god, it's 2D. And most people seem pretty like cool with it from what I saw. Again, this is a, you know, toxic Twitch weird chat, but when I looked at it, I'm like, this is looks pretty damn cool.
I have a feeling it's going to be good. The graphic style, if I'm nitpicking, it looked extremely clean. Very
too clean for you?
Yeah, almost too clean. There's very, very clean and almost sterile.
Well, it's a lot of robotics and environments that could be suited to that.
It's not going to turn me away from it. I just thought it was an odd choice.
That's okay. He's hunted by robots. She is. That's right. Samus heads to a mysterious remote planet, is hunted by the Emmy robots, all while trying to overcome the dread that is plaguing the planet. Oh, and of course, they have an amiibo announced that comes out on launch with Samus versus the robot, which looks almost like looks kind of like a Valve robot.
I was going to say, the robot, I got a lot of Portal vibes off of the robots.
Very interesting. But they're doing something different. You know, we're robots, like, that's pretty damn cool. There's some organic stuff in here, too. I like the little combo shot things that I saw here. And I'm not the biggest Metroid fan, but, like, I'll probably check this out. If they have a demo, at least be like, okay.
Yeah, I'm excited for it. And as we've talked about before, Nintendo doing their announce and drop strategy. Here, this comes out October 6th, I think.
Nothing
so very soon.
Nothing for poor Pitt from Kid Icarus.
No, that there's a couple things I was hoping to see that I didn't, and Kid Icarus was one of them.
It's going to be an update to Mario Party. Superstars coming to Switch on October 29th.
That's a new one.
Oh, it's a brand new one.
It's a new one. It's fine. Oh. So this...
So I was right about them testing the online multiplayer, the last one for
everyone
new game.
Everyone was right about that.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, when everyone who is like, I wonder why they're adding an online update
this
to Super
soon?
Mario Party 3 years after the fact.
Okay.
It's not that soon. It's 3 years after. There was four of them on the GameCube.
Oh, okay.
Three of them on the Nintendo 64.
The pandemic was a time where I thought this came out like a year and a half ago.
No, it's been out for 3 years. And
okay.
they definitely pump these out. As a matter of fact, 100 minigames from the past, great. Only 5 levels from the first 3 games in the series actually seems like kind of scant to me, but whatever.
Well, it said it will include 5 classic boards. I'm not sure that's only going to be 5. Maybe it...
I was waiting for them to clarify that, and they didn't.
Because even the one on the N64 had more than 5. There was like, what's... 7 or 8? I should know. I'm editing the reviews.
You should know.
I should know. I might be wrong.
But I'm going to go through some of the smaller ones that really excited me that I don't think you'll necessarily touch on.
I don't care.
SMT5. Shin Megami Tensei 5. Really looking forward to it. Great series. The third one just got a remaster on the Switch. This is another one of those ones that's kind of like Metroid Prime 4, but for a different company. This was in the very first Nintendo Direct that showed Switch games coming out.
Oh,
there was a very short teaser trailer
okay.
for Shin Megami Tensei 5. They dropped it and said fuck all about it until today. So I'm actually really looking forward to that. That's a great series.
They had to work on it.
If you enjoy the Persona games, you'll like this as well. It's definitely different, but a lot of the monsters are the same. It's a very good series. Monkey Ball. I am so excited about this. The first 3 Monkey Ball games... You are really doing this a lot today. The first 3 Monkey Ball games in the series are being remastered and put on one cartridge. Those are the best 3 Monkey Ball games. 1 and 2 especially. I'm so happy to see this. When they remastered Banana Blitz in HD a few years ago, everyone was like, why the fuck are they doing this? That's like the worst Monkey Ball. It's the one that no one wanted to see remastered. So to actually see this coming out is great. When people talk about party games, Monkey Ball is one of the first things that pops into my mind. I know a lot of people think Smash or Mario Party. In my first apartment, the first 2 Monkey Ball games were on the TV almost every night. And it wasn't the main game mode. It's all the stupid mini games that they add. Like Monkey Fight and Monkey Target and Monkey Bowling. All of that stuff is fantastic. So I'm very happy to see that. I love the WarioWare series.
I was going
to
say, let's not...
I love the WarioWare series.
Prep that. The WarioWare, people got fucking stoked. I got stoked for that. I love the WarioWare games.
I do.
I love them.
And this one looks very different. Well, it looks slightly different in that you actually take control of the characters and do things in the game. So
yes.
Instead of 3-second micro games, a lot of these timers looked like they were closer to 10 seconds. And
there's like action platforming happening in some of them. It looks like...
Yeah.
Instead of it being like a quick response type of thing.
And
the characters play differently in the same puzzles, it looks
yes.
like. Minigames, that's extremely interesting. So that's like a whole new element. It'd be nice to see with using the Joy-Cons to like, you know, pick your nose or whatever, like the old Wii motor, but this is something fresh at least. And it's one of those games, again, it's like, oh, we forget there's WarioWare is a series that Nintendo can bring back, you know, every console like this. So that's great to see that.
I'm still playing WarioWare Gold on the 3DS, which is like one of the last official 3DS releases, and it's going to carry me right into this. So I'm very excited.
So nice to see WarioWare back. And then I got stoked until I saw it was just a re-release of Advance Wars.
I'm still stoked.
I mean, it'd be nice to see a whole new game, but maybe, you know, maybe this is the start of them doing a whole new game. But it's, you know, it's a...
Well, we talked... My take on this is we talked about it earlier. There's tons of properties people want to come back from Nintendo. They don't have time to do all of it.
Sure.
So Advance Wars is one of those games where it's like... Series is fairly long. People probably haven't played the first 2 in a while. Graphics are totally redone. They look great. There's tons of new animation. And it's the first 2 games on one cartridge. I would love to see a new one, but people weren't exactly happy with the direction that the series was going in. So to see the first two, which are widely considered the best two in the series,
that's the only ones I played.
Put on one cartridge, and I'm happy with that.
The whole point to me is this: is that a turn-based strategy like that, you don't need. It's the same game. Like, you're not going to need to see a fresh coat of paint is fine, but it's not going to be a fresh experience for me if I go back and play that. I'd be like, oh, I'm replaying the game. It just looks different. That's all. It's not like a first-person shooter. You know what I mean? That's all. But maybe that means a new game in the future. It looks cute, though, and adorable, you know, with the graphics it did.
Yeah, it doesn't look like a simple... It looks like they put some effort into it.
But, I mean, the core gameplay, it's a turn-based strategy game.
Well, yeah.
So it's like, what are you going to do? But, no, it's fine. Then, of course, they showed the Mario Rabbids thing again. It was different, though, than what Ubisoft showed. It was a little bit different. And then they showed... we hit most of the main ones until we get to the one that I was super excited about and actually, like, well, I screamed about because I'm a little fucking kid. Zelda. Game & Watch, which we called. That were geniuses. So they're doing a Game & Watch release. Yay! It's adorable, and it's green.
It's a bit more... it's a bit beefier than the Mario one, too. Zelda one is... Zelda 1 and Zelda 2, but also the Game Boy version of Link's Awakening, which I think is kind of cool. And they're not doing the DX version. They're doing the actual just, pea soup green, black and white Game Boy version.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah, me too.
I'm fine.
And then they're adding the clock, of course, and the a special countdown timer that is Zelda 2 themed.
That's great.
But if anything was proven by the first go-around with this when they did the Mario one, they're going to make plenty of these. No one's going to need to go out and, struggle to pre-order these. Someone even said that one, I think maybe it was even Chris Kohler, posted that there were places that had the Mario one on sale for like $40. Like, they made enough of them to actually put them on sale.
What did they cost originally? Was it 50?
60.
60? I should have waited. No, but I love this. Unfortunately, you did not get the actual Game & Watch Zelda game on it, unfortunately. One of the last Game & Watch.
That was a dual screen, yeah. No way to do that.
Could have maybe, I don't know, shrunk it down. But you get a face swap of the Game & Watch title, Vermin, with Link as a playable character.
Oh, so, yeah, that's right.
So
that
you
too.
Get so you get an old school, really old school Game & Watch, like early 80s Game & Watch. I love the fact, I had to double check, I looked at the Mario one, that they put start and select above the B and A. I fucking love that. So they actually altered it and put two extra buttons on there. That's fantastic. You need that to constantly check, your item and menu and to fire arrows.
Sure.
How are you going to fire? How would you fire arrows with it not having the select button on there? You'd have to do a combo, hit the clock. So no, I don't know. That got to me. Yeah, I'm a fucking collector idiot. I'm going to get that, obviously. I think it's adorable.
Yeah. No,
the fact that they're doing any game, I don't care if they do Game & Watches for random shit. Like, it's the fact that they're bringing back something from their pre-NES era stuff. I love that they're doing that. I just love it.
I'm not the biggest Zelda fan, but I was bummed, kind of disappointed in Nintendo for not doing more for Zelda's 35th anniversary. I mean,
you got the
games are sitting right fucking there. I mean, not bringing Wind Waker and
we got
Twilight Princess to Switch really smacks of just not. I mean, I don't know.
You got Skyward Sword coming. They talked about that. So
it just seems like bare minimum.
Skyward Sword. You got the DLC for the fucking the fighting one that I always forget about. Age of Calamity. They got that. Hyrule Warriors. Yes. That's coming out. They're working on Breath of the Wild 2. They're not going to be squeezing this year. I thought this year would make more sense, but either they're pushing it back because you said it's made the Switch Pro, or they have so many games coming out that they don't want to just clog it. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Either way, maybe they'll keep it. Maybe they'll keep it for March. For the 5th anniversary of the Switch, it makes sense. So I mean, I don't know. You wanted the Super Mario All-Stars sort of treatment.
Yeah, and not even for me personally, and that's the weird thing. That's how much I feel like they probably should have fucking thrown something like that together. I'm not even a Zelda fan. Had they done it, I probably would not have bought it, but I know Bonnie would have got it. I know a lot of Zelda fans were hoping for something like that. Because of all the things they brought over from the Wii U, the two things that I think that are remaining that people would really like to play that were not experienced by many people were the remasters of those two Zelda games that they did.
Well, it was always got the 40th in 5 years. you can always look forward to that.
Sure.
So yeah, so I think that my final or one of the final takeaways of this presentation was that there was I hate to use the term, there was something for everyone, but there really was. There was really the only thing that if, the only thing that would have totally upped it, yeah, if they showed F-Zero, then I would be holy shit. Like, that'd be like,
I would have loved to have seen an F-Zero. I would have loved to have seen, would have loved to have seen a Kid Icarus, and I would have loved to have seen more for Zelda for the Zelda fans. That's pretty much all, though.
And we didn't talk about Mario Golf, but that comes out like in a week and a half.
Yeah,
that looks outstanding.
It does. That
I mean, that looks incredible.
So,
like, I don't know how well the other golf ones have come out probably have sold well enough to keep doing them, but that looks, I mean, that with the extra modes they have with like the dash mode, and they have like an arena mode.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, and plus they have the Mii mode. Like almost like an RPG adventure. Yep.
They're finally bringing that back.
I chuckled. There was like, they showed the Mii, like there was a female Mii character jumping away from like a dragon, like spitting fire. Like you have a golf club, you're going to golf, but like you're avoiding a dragon. It's so silly that like when Nintendo does it, though, you accept it. Like, okay, that's cute. I want to play that sort of idea.
Absolutely.
So yeah, so that was Nintendo. So I guess we'll look later in the year to see if we're going to have that Switch Pro news or not, because we know they're going to be probably producing them this year. We'll just see if that comes to happen.
I feel like there's got to be some more stuff. I feel like there's probably a couple more things up their sleeve, because there was nothing. Unless I'm wrong. The Metroid. There didn't seem like there was a lot that was targeted specifically at holiday season 2021. This was all like from now until
Metroid is November.
Metroid is October.
It's October? Okay.
Yeah, and I think that was the latest.
So you think that maybe like in late?
I think there might be fall, there might be something fall that'll announce for November, December, maybe.
Surprise Star Fox game or the remake of the one no one played
like
in Wii U.
That would be nice.
They still got that remake. It's funny. There's one more another game that's coming out on the Switch that was on the Wii U. There's less and less exclusive Wii U games that are less left. There's like less and less every other month.
Star Fox Zero, which blows, and Xenoblade Chronicles X or Xenoblade X. I can't think of a whole
lot. We're running out.
Can't think of a whole lot. The Zelda remasters.
It's going to be the system that never was, almost, give another like year or two.
Yeah.
Ian, you know I'm a cereal fiend. You are as well. We grew up eating cereal every day of our childhood. Saturday mornings, a big hunkin' bowl while you're watching cartoons. Cereal is so yummy, but historically...
It's delicious. Awful for you, though.
But it's historically the worst thing you can probably eat. Filled with sugar, artificial sweeteners in it, and just not good for your body long-term. But now this is the zenith of potentially human evolution and food creation. Magic Spoon. Magic Spoon is the delicious, healthy cereal alternative.
So Magic Spoon, check this out. 0 grams of sugar, 13 to 14 grams of protein, and only 4 net grams of carbs in each serving. And it's a big serving too. The serving size is an actual cup. Most cereals, half a cup, 3/4 of a cup. That's not a serving. You're going to eat like 2 of those. Only 140 calories in a serving. It's keto-friendly, gluten-free, grain-free, soy-free, low-carb, and GMO-free. When you order, you get a variety pack. You get 4 flavors, cocoa, fruity, frosted, and peanut butter. And all the flavors are delicious. The peanut butter tastes like actual roasted peanut butter. I was surprised. It's really delicious. And I'm not even generally a fan of like the fruit-flavored cereals. The fruity is probably my favorite flavor they offer. It's super good.
It's delicious. And you can mix and match when you order. They also have blueberry as well, and they have cinnamon, and they have sometimes have like little seasonal
flavors.
Mm-hmm. It's really delicious. You know us. You know how we love cereal. I gave up eating cereal for literally 3.5 years. I'm back eating cereal again with Magic Spoon. Right now, you can go to magicspoon.com/CU podcast to grab a variety pack and try it today. And be sure to use our promo code CU podcast at checkout to save $5 off your order. That's $5 off your first order with the promo code CU podcast. And Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund your money. No questions asked. Remember, get your next delicious bowl of guilt-free cereal at magicspoon.com/CU podcast and use the code CU podcast to save $5 off. Thank you so much, Magic Spoon, so much for sponsoring this episode. So Nintendo had a great showing at E3, Ian. That showed why they are the titans of controlling the, I guess, family-friendly video game market. But there's a contender. There's a contender in the wings that we are so excited to discuss. That also had an E3 presentation.
I'm not excited.
A 10-minute E3 presentation I got up bright and early on my Monday morning and I watched it, and the chat was very excited. The Intellivision Amico had their almost like their coming out party, like, you know, their Sweet 16, so to speak, coming out to the world, and this is what we have to show you with our upcoming console that may or may not come out sometime this year, which we'll get into. And with all seriousness, it was a gigantic thud, not just in my estimation, across the internet. It was either met with derision from most people, including game journalists, or it was so much of a nothing that IGN didn't really cover it. I didn't see a GameSpot article last I checked. So it sort of came and went in a blink.
Try as Tommy May. He cannot get mainstream traction on the Intellivision Amico. And there's a reason why. It looks like shit. Looks like an also-ran.
It looks like one of those, I think one of the comments I saw, it looked like one of those consoles you see like in Toys R Us around the, you know, like early 2000s, mid-2000s, like for families, like, oh, just like, you know, get 10 games in one and plug it into your TV.
Journalist Kyle Orland made a good point about it before we get into it, that this is the Wii U 2 without Nintendo's backing. And think about how disastrous the Wii U was.
No one wanted the Wii U still. That was Nintendo coming off of the heels of one of the biggest selling consoles ever.
Right. I feel like we can cover it without watching it, but okay.
We'll go through it. Good old our pal Greg Miller doing the intro there.
Hi, I'm Tommy Tallarico. And what an honor it is for Intellivision
to
be part of this year's E3. I want to personally thank the ESA for having us be involved. And we have seen some incredible stuff. What a great
time. So Tommy spends the first couple minutes talking about himself, basically, and going through his history. And, you know, the fact that, you know, he worked on some of these franchises. He threw in Metroid Prime into there, even though I've seen some controversy about his involvement with that franchise, about how much he actually worked on it. And then he brought up his Guinness World Records, which is nice to bring up something that you pay for in order to get an award.
Sure.
That you worked on all this stuff. But then he actually goes into the console at some point here. Let's fast forward here. And he shows the controller, how unique it is. By the way, that's a cell phone in his hand, not a controller.
Yeah, there's still a lot of cell phone.
Hide in a game like Spades. And here you'll see it on Farkle, another one of our six pack-in games that you get free on every console.
This is interesting.
Shake it and you'll feel the vibration. We have haptic feedback. And watch, you pour it out, boom, and the dice pour right out on
it. First of all, there was a delay. They didn't pour right out, but okay.
I want to know why we think this is something that we need to point out in 2021. That was maybe a selling point in 2004, and then it was quickly derided as gimmicks.
So this 10-minute video, before we get into some of the more details, is an info dump. It's everything regurgitated from the past,
yes,
really 2 years, as quickly as we can, as much information as we can, because Tommy talks nonstop through the whole thing. They don't show any game for more than like a few seconds each. They run through as much as they can and mention as many franchises they can. It's a shotgun approach to see what they can attract as they go, which never ever works in marketing, first of all, but it comes off as almost desperate in terms of, oh, I got 10 minutes, I better throw everything out there and this is what we got. And it's like the games did not lead this presentation.
No. Not only that, I feel like it's this whole presentation has a very back again for the first time feel to it.
Oh yeah.
He desperately does not want people to look into the fact that this thing was announced when? 2018?
17,
and it was supposed to be out when? Last October, and then
2019,
when?
Yeah.
And then again in April, and I'm sorry, if you really want to watch it, we can, but I feel like it's just easier to get through these points. The big takeaway here is there is no, one of my big takeaways, there is no release date announced here. No mention of a release date.
No mention of a price either, by the
way. Well, as I think you said, I said that too, but as I think you said, and you made a good point when we were talking about it yesterday, is that's not something that is oftentimes, it can be mentioned, but it's not always mentioned. The lack of a release date when he's got investors on the line still thinking that this is coming out in October just shows me he knows that there is no way in hell. He didn't even give it a quarter four. There was just nothing.
This is not coming out this year.
This is not coming out this year.
I think I had a 17% chance. I'm being funny with the numbers, but I'll be shocked if it comes out. Maybe if it gets some out for late December, October, absolutely not. It's not happening.
But I think he realizes that.
Streaming processor and incredible lifelike graphics. That's not what we're about.
He's already prepping people saying this is not what we're about. It's almost like, why do an E3 presentation if supposedly hardcore gamers are not your audience? You know this is not. Why even do it then? Like, what is the point at that point? And I think he responded to someone saying, well, it's to get publishers and get retailers interested. And I'm like, this is not the video to get publishers interested or retailers interested. This is not the video for that.
No.
Plus, you don't have to waste money on an E3 video to do that. That's a CG render, by the way. Shocking. This is what I want to go through. I want to point out some stuff. That's a CG render. And you're going to see a bunch of, the same Photoshop images of Amico controllers in people's hands at an E3 video.
Yeah.
You're going to see this.
Come over.
In
maybe
a second.
You have a husband or a wife who isn't in his gaming as much as you are. Maybe
Photoshopped. That's Photoshopped.
Badly Photoshopped.
Grandma comes over and you want to play a simple motion control game or a card game or a board.
They're actually playing.
Dice,
I think that's
whatever it is. See, all of our games are built around fun and simplicity.
Oh!
Other systems are not built around fun. The other systems are not built around fun. They want you to have a terrible time.
Most important thing for us and gathering people.
Yeah, everything's shown for like a second and a half.
Here at Intellivision, we've assembled an incredible, passionate team of game makers who have over 600 years experience.
Why do we keep bringing up the 600
because,
years experience?
Because
I saw people immediately make fun of that.
Oh, no. Here's the thing about this. Well, as I said about the Tommy, I'm speaking to you directly. You can't hide anymore. There's no more cover anymore. The mainstream now audience and gaming journalists and people that know about games and tech, you can't hide from it anymore. This is one of the reasons why this was so derided.
Yeah, you don't have your cherry-picked, team of 50-year-olds to defend you.
No, you don't have your little Atari age forum harem in order to massage you anymore. Where's Jay Howard, by the way? He's not here.
Your favorite games. Everything we do, we focus on
Probably Photoshop.
Global marketing director Jay Allard, who was just contracted for some side work, because that's what you do with a global marketing director.
That's bullshit. That's probably Photoshop.
Putting people together and having
that's probably Photoshopped.
In fact,
that looks Photoshopped.
Hardware entirely around those two things. So, for example, our controller is really unique. It has a color capacitive touchscreen.
That's not unique, having a capacitive touchscreen.
It really comes in handy
really
when
isn't.
You're playing others that might not be as good as you in gaming. So it's a great way to give them little hints. For example, here in Shark, whoever's in last place, it will vibrate because we have haptic as well. And then it shows the color of the clam that's going to release the next big bonus pearl. So only
So this is why I wanted to watch it, because I forgot about this. This actually, out of all the things, this annoyed me the most. The whole time, Ian, we talk about this console being for non-gamers and being simple. We said, oh, we'll give them, we have a controller that has haptic feedback and it has a fucking volley, it has a speaker on it, and it's got a 64 direction pad, something really simple, and it moves, and it has all these extra bells and whistles. And we'll put LED lights on it. And now you're telling me that my grandma has to figure out, give her a controller. Okay. Now you're going to play a game called Shark. Okay. You have a color assigned you. Okay. Now, Grandma, you got to realize that at a certain point in time, you got to look down on your controller while you're playing a game. This is someone that's not a gamer, by the way. Look down at the controller, see a light. Okay, realize that that light corresponds to something back on the screen. Look back up on the screen and then navigate and get an item. That's supposed to be simple for a non-gamer to get. All this weird interaction with the controller versus, I don't know, how about just having a simple mode for certain players that automatically get the power-ups or they get a boost in their stats or on their, their fish? Like, it's really going out of your way to use this controller for things, and you're actually making it more complicated for even regular gamers to play at that point.
As we mentioned, I think, once before when talking about the Amico, there's a reason why the Wii U came out of the gate like, dual screen, look down,
never
and do
used
this,
the screen
and then never, ever used it. Because unless you're playing something like the DS, where you're literally flicking your eyes up and down, no one wants
and it's
to...
it's still within your vision.
Right, it's in your field of vision. Yeah. No one wants to look back and forth at two screens to play something.
Again,
it's
this
miserable.
Is also, if it's weird for gamers, for non-gamers, no, it's not intuitive
that
at all.
That player will get that information. And also, having a screen on every single controller gives you a lot of really cool and unique abilities to...
But they're playing on phones, by the way. I just think it's funny, like, half of the things we're seeing are on the phone still, not the fucking controllers.
So that, to
used.
Me, really says, this is either older footage, or which is not good.
Or it's not working on controllers yet.
And someone mentioned that I saw somewhere. You're not seeing it because no one's seen three frickin' Intellivision controllers in the same room before.
They might have at the National Game Museum playing Astro Smash. They might have. But for stuff like this, we have not.
No,
for the card games.
The heavy leaning on the phone thing.
The motion controls we haven't.
Is problematic for two reasons, as we've mentioned.
Game designs, for example,
for a long time. he swore that none of this stuff was doable on anything but an Intellivision controller.
Of course.
Well, here we are doing it on a phone.
And they can hide it in a game like Spades. And here you'll see it on Farkle, another one of our six pack-in games that you get free on every console. You can shake it and you'll feel the vibration. We have haptic feedback. And watch it.
Second time they mentioned haptic feedback. That almost seems like it was put in afterwards. They put it in for Shark as well. Why is that a big deal to mention haptic feedback? Like, that's not...
Because it's a buzzword.
Pour it out. Boom, and the dice pour right out.
There's a delay on that too, by the way.
Motion are also really important, especially for casual gamers. So a lot of our sports and recreation, for example, will use that kind of motion control. You'll see here with...
I love this shot because you can't see them actually using the controllers to play the game.
Right.
It's hidden. It's hidden behind the girl's nice dress.
You're throwing the bag.
You can't see. You can't see it. You don't see how it works.
Well, she's also holding a phone.
Oh, was she?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't even see it. Okay.
She's holding a phone. These controllers... do not exist in incredibly well functioning
that we've seen
form.
That we've
even,
seen.
There was even the whole thing at
have eight positions up, down, left, right, and the diagonals.
At the National Video Game Museum, where it shows him like taking a controller and shaking it to get the screen
get
to
the
like,
rotation right
get, to get the rotation right
directions and touch sensitivity as well. So the harder I press down, it'll affect gameplay. Here's a feature I think a lot of gamers are going to love. I can take my controller. I can go over your house, dock it in your system. And because it recognizes that it's my controller, we can now play all of them.
I'm going
You're
to
right.
be
some,
nice.
Some of them are using phones. One guy's using a controller. I think it's Hom's. It's Pitch and that's, it must be his family. One guy's using a phone. The rest are using controller phones.
I will be nice. That is the one thing that I can truly say I do like about the Amico, if it ever comes out. That's a nice idea. The whole kit, port your licenses around on your controller. I think that's handy.
Use an RFID.
On your system
probably
at your house. As long as my controller is there, my games are there as well. Another cool feature that we incorporated is wireless contact charging.
Okay.
Cool feature.
Okay.
Now we're really stretching for cool features.
This is the thing your cordless phone does. To call it wireless is, I think, a misnomer because there's still a wire connected somewhere. And originally it was supposed to truly be key wireless charging.
Yeah, this is not the key charging. This is the contact.
Embarrassing thing to reference because it's like, wow, this is what your Wiimote sat in. Basically, your Wiimote sat in something with a contact on the bottom to charge them.
So once you're done with your controller and your game's over, you just dock it right back.
That's not something we need to hear about.
Charges for you. Another unique feature of Amico is that we have interactive LED lighting.
That's ridiculous.
The console itself,
the interactive lights thing is not. You're going to cause seizures in some kids, by the way.
And again,
it's ridiculous.
And again, we have not seen any way that that's actually useful.
You know what's really cool about having the
photoshopped image.
Focus the people.
The reason I come back to the Photoshop image is that to do that during an E3 presentation is so low. You're actually using controllers of some of the other companies that are involved in E3, and we're just going to wipe out those controllers of real products and put in, CG renders.
I'll give you an example. Astro Smash is a four-player game. At any point during the game, somebody can pick up a controller and just hit the ship they want and go right into the game at any point.
That's any arcade game or portal, like NBA Jam, you come into the game, or beat 'em up. That's not special.
Now, drop-in is interesting, but it's only interesting for more advanced games. This is common. But
we also that's just an arcade game, putting a quarter in and starting up.
And we'll be releasing more information.
There's the art for the games. Oh, they don't even show the physical media at E3. I skipped over that. They have a silhouette of the fucking cards. How do I go back like one frame here or whatever? They have a silhouette and don't even show you at E3 what the fuck this physical media looks like. It's infuriating. And not for me, for people that are like actually want this console. You should be infuriated that
they're stringing you along on
4 months
physical
media. From release.
Release.
4 months from release and 8 months from the original release date. We don't have any clue officially what the fuck the physical media looks like on our console. Are you joking? This far away from the original release date after the fact? What is going on? Now, we know that it's likely just a fucking RFID card that gives you a key to access the game. We know that. And we know that's not truly physical media. But for all the people with the pre-orders that are hoping for real physical media, this is why you're getting tricked. Oh, buy these artworks with a fucking card likely inside to get the key to your game. It's like putting a serial number in the box, basically.
I like the Moon Patrol artwork.
You like the early 80s looking artwork?
This year. Now, here's something I think a lot of gamers are going to appreciate. We don't allow any loot boxes, in-game purchases, in-app advertising, or paid downloadable content. But what we do have is an online leaderboard system for most of our games where you can go in there and check your scores against your state, your country, the world, or the month, the year, and of all time.
Okay, I like leaderboards and I don't like loot boxes. Great.
So if you have the high score at the end of the month of your country, we're going to email your certificate that you can go print out and hang on your wall.
That sounds like an idea. We're going to email you a certificate for you to print out. That sounds like something that a website would push in 99 in order to promote the product. That is ridiculous.
It is. There's just bigger problems. Oh, whatever. Sure. That's cute. Part of any video game. Fine.
Okay, now the games are up to $10, and the physical games are $20 at launch. $20 you're going to play for a lot of these games that are were pre-existing mobile games, or maybe
weren't these games? What was the original price?
Three to eight dollars.
I think it was $2.99 to $8.
Game system are the games themselves. They all have to be super fun to play, and that's where we really, really shine. In fact,
No one else cares.
It's a 1942 type game. There you go. I'd be shocked that that wasn't a pre-existing game, by the way. Someone will probably hunt that down and realize that might be a pre-existing game.
Yeah, or one that was in development for something else.
Yeah.
Are highly curated.
Highly curated.
All of them contain a single and multiplayer or couch co-op mode. And all the games on our system are exclusive or contain exclusive content.
Oh, he finally caved and realized it's bullshit to keep calling these games exclusive because we tacked on a feature that wasn't in the original release.
No one else has ever used that definition of exclusive ever.
It took him a year and a half of arguing with us and other people to be like, you cannot call a game exclusive if it's available on other consoles. You can't. Or other platforms. You just can't do that. That's false advertising. Finally, he says, he admits, okay, exclusive content.
Like Retro Reimagine, where we take some of the greatest classic video games of all time, give them new graphics, new audio, add multiplayer and couch co-op. Some of the things we have, for example, 12 of the best games from Atari, like Breakout, Asteroids, Tempest, Missile Command.
We don't see Tempest, by the way.
We've never seen Tempest. Not even an inkling of Tempest.
Burger Time, we don't see Burger Time.
Never seen Burger Time.
And Bump and Jump.
We don't see Bump and Jump.
I would actually get excited about Bump and Jump. I love Bump and Jump.
So he starts rattling off these names, and then like it's like they're buzzwords for people to say, oh, I remember Burger Time, but like are they being worked on? Have we seen it?
And even some of the best in television games from the past, like Cloudy Mountain.
There's the D&D sort of game.
We have Edutainment.
That's a free flash game on SesameStreet.org with Sesame Street that you can play right now.
That's
a flash game. A flash game. What exclusive feature are you going to add that? I don't know, but that's a free
browser flash game. We're going to charge you for it. That's the exclusive feature.
We're going to charge you charge between $3 and $10 for a free fucking
exclusive
flash game.
In this version, you can pay money.
Exclusive, pay some money on use an awkward controller.
Titles for kids 7 and under. Things like Sesame.
That's another free flat.
Street and Care Bear.
That's a free mobile game that I download on my phone to make sure called Care Bears Carts or whatever. A free mobile game.
Now, our original IP category contains brand new games.
Oh, brand new? Brand new.
A lot of times around our unique.
We've been through this before.
Finnegan Fox is not a brand new IP.
No, it's not.
We stop. You took a game called Fox and Force and you made it look worse. It's not an original IP. It's not. Stop. Stop it. Stop it.
Controller. Some of those games are platformers like Finnegan Fox.
No.
Bomb Squad.
How is Bomb Squad an original IP if it was based upon the television game?
Right.
I don't even understand that.
Also, but this is the first time we've seen anything resembling gameplay in Bomb Squad.
And they're not using an Intellivision controller. They're using a cell phone.
No, that is an Intellivision controller.
Is it?
Yeah.
Is that the... Are you sure?
Yep.
Oh, okay. We got one. All right. Okay. Sorry, I jumped the gun. Sorry, Tommy. Okay. We got the first time we're seeing it being used for something. For a second. Is it for a second? A second.
Yes, literally a second.
Strikers? Flying Tigers?
Someone's going to find Flying Tigers was another gamer in development. Someone's going to find it. By the way, that's the only game that has nice sprite work out of almost all these games, by the way. It looks like a 1942 type of game.
And we even got the original Echo the Dolphin team to create our new title called Dolphin Quest.
Okay, so this has been there since the beginning. The original trailer for this back in like fucking August 2018, there was something showing this. I don't know if this is a single screen game like Shark or where this is at. The issue is that we don't know where in development these things are.
The other issue is that lots of people remember Echo the Dolphin, but not lots of people actually remember it fondly.
To actually like have fun playing it, you mean?
Yeah, it was a neat idea that was not exactly greatly implemented.
We even take more modern...
Free mobile game. Free mobile game that's 5 years old, Evel Knievel.
...modern games and add exclusive co-op modes. Games like Rigid Force Redux and...
Already available, of course.
...Dino Blaster. Now, our sports and recreational category not only has...
Okay, they showed the baseball game, literally the same footage that they showed back in August of last year. That's literally the same prototype footage. Literally the same five-second clip. Have you made any progress?
Big sports like Major League Baseball and soccer.
New soccer, at least.
Also recreational sports like cornhole, skiing, pool, and many more. Now, our casual category contains many party games, dice games, board games, card games.
When I hear that, grab a pack of cards and dice.
Things like spades. Emoji charades, and even award-winning board games like Blank Slate, Telestrations, and Ink and Gold.
The problem with this stuff is that these are not going to come out. If a board game like Ink and Gold is not going to be exclusive to the Amiga. They'll put it out everywhere for people to play. Or Telestrations. That's not going to be exclusive.
And all of those other games are so generic enough that you can probably find them on multi-packs on other systems.
Those companies would be stupid to put them exclusive on the Amiga.
I've already mentioned some really big partnerships and licenses like Major League Baseball and Sesame Street.
Partnerships. I bought a license.
Including things like Mattel Hot Wheels, Harlem Globetrotters, and so much more.
Do you think, what percentage of people watching the E3 stream probably knew what the fuck the Harlem Globetrotters were? I'm being totally honest.
I feel like that's
15%?
No, I feel like people know.
Do you think anyone under 20 knows who the Harlem Globetrotters are?
We got the original team to be working on it. We
that's a big venture. Oh, here you go, Ian. So this is the big denouement. So Earthworm Jim, which capped off the August video, that was the thing that got the most buzz on social media, was Earthworm Jim, right? They showed the little walk cycle, and there was a couple of sound effects, and he walked off screen. We are 10 months from August. We're almost a year out of August. You would think that was going to be one of the flagship titles of your system. You would have something new to show.
Yeah.
Tommy shows a giveaway of three pictures that will be signed and given out to you for Earthworm Jim. There's no new gameplay footage, no talk about when this game is going to come out. We have no clue if this game's been worked on the past 10 months.
And I'm pretty sure that's promo art for a book that's unrelated to...
Has nothing to do with the game?
Yeah, it's just leftover promo art.
So
we're going
to
give away...
How does it look when the only title that got you buzz at all, you have nothing to show at E3 10 months later?
Nothing. The team members signed it.
So,
nothing to show.
This is why I said it's very much a back again for the first time thing. He's hoping that this is the first experience most people are having. He's hoping that he can scrap the previous 2 to 3 years of Amico and start fresh.
That's basically it.
But there's no one, like you said, for people who have been following this, the amount of new stuff in here probably totals.
Minimal.
A minute and a half tops.
You had
the
shots of two or three new games.
Yes,
for a couple seconds.
Flying Tigers, the brief
soccer
gameplay shot of
the 3D shooter,
Time Bomb, Smart Bomb, whatever, Bomb
sure.
Squad,
Bomb Squad.
Yeah, I mean that's it. I don't think any of that footage of Night Stalker was new.
We're gonna get into a weird state going forward, and this is what maybe we finish up on. This is not like this is gonna, end tomorrow, but now that there's a public face to this campaign in terms of the mainstream gaming press and to all the people that know about this that were laughing at this, it's not just five people. The vast majority of people were either disappointed, even supporters on Atari Age said, yeah, I was expecting more. Even people like, yeah, I could have seen more. It wasn't a lot of new stuff.
You can only repackage this shit so many times. It's literally, my thinking is, he got a handful of people very excited about this early on, got all this footage, and has just been finding new ways to repackage this footage for about 2 years.
Well, because he doesn't have to. You know why? His money is not entirely on the line. He has investors.
Yeah.
He completed a successful, he got 4,794 funders on Republic alone. That doesn't count any funding for that. $11.6 million committed on Republic. So if those investors never see their money again, which is likely, especially even breaking even, no skin off his back, it's fine. So what's telling is that I'm not sure the investors were made aware of this, because on Republic's site under updates, there has been an update to the Republic investors since May 11th. You think that your investors would want to know about that you're planning an E3 presentation, which is huge, a huge marketing push, the biggest marketing potential you'll ever have to get in front of actual potential audience. And there's still, we're recording this on the 15th, he didn't even tell them that he did it. What does that tell me? That he didn't want the investors to see this or know about this, because he knew that the response was going to be bad, or at least lukewarm at best.
I don't think he wanted the investors to see it. And I think the big thing is, going back to the silent, I can't think of a better word for it than the silent delay. By literally not saying anything about the release date, I think it's clear that it's not coming out in October.
I was surprised that there was nothing on this on the Republic investor page. No update at all for this. I was like almost shocked. Like, I have investors. This is E3. This is the coming out party for my console, basically. This is like where you cap off. This is where you get the buzz. Nothing. Not a fucking word. But I'll go do my fucking podcast with YouTubers and have my attack dogs harass people that are critical of a system, but I won't tell my people. People that gave me over $11 million, they can fuck off. I'm not going to tell them about what's going on in terms of the marketing. Because if I saw this as an investor, even if I was gung-ho about this and saw the reaction, I might have to second-guess myself at some point. So this is a weird turning point, I think, now on the coverage, because now going forward, a lot more people are know about this, even if it's not covered by IGN or GameSpot. And like I said, now you're not hidden anymore. This is not behind the scenes. Now it's out in the open. So best of luck. I guess we'll update you in a month when it just gets delayed again. That's probably when we're going to come back to this, I'm guessing, because it will be delayed again. All right.
Yeah, I mean, based on what has come out of his mouth, if they're not being produced in 15 days, then it's not hitting October.
Or start to be produced, yeah.
Yeah.
You got to be up and going in early July there. All right, best of luck, Tommy. Ian, summer is coming, and hotter days are just around the corner. You can keep cool with the help of our friends at Manscaped, who are sponsoring this podcast segment. They've just launched their fourth generation performance package, which includes the Lawnmower 4.0, holding it in my hand right here. Compliment your summer grooming routine and join the 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped by going to manscaped.com for 20% off and free shipping with the code CUPODCAST.
It's time to bundle up the Manscaped Performance Package 4.0. Inside this package, you'll find the Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer, Weed Whacker ear and nose hair trimmer, Crop Preserver ball deodorant, Crop Reviver toner, Performance boxer briefs, and a travel bag to hold your goodies. That's a whole lot of stuff. Their fourth generation trimmer features a cutting edge ceramic blade to reduce grooming accidents. No one likes those, thanks to their advanced skin safe technology. The Lawnmower 4.0 has a 7,000 RPM motor, a new multifunction on-off switch can engage a travel lock, and gives you the ability to turn the 4000K LED spotlight on and off when needed for a more precise shave. If you want to take your grooming game even further, you can pick up the Weed Whacker, the perfect tool to eliminate ear and nose hair. Seal the deal with Manscaped's liquid formulations. Before heading outside, use Crop Preserver Down Under deodorant to keep you on your game in the heat. After a long day of trimming the lawn and whacking the weeds in the summer heat, boost your freshness with the Crop Reviver. Manscaped even threw in 2 new free gifts for their Performance Package 4.0, the Manscaped Boxers and the Shed Travel Bag. Bring your comfort in boxers to another level.
That's a lot of stuff in that Performance Package. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code CUPODCAST at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code CUPODCAST at manscaped.com. Stay fresh this summer and shine with Manscaped. All right, Ian, you all good?
I'm good.
All right. We're going to discuss an announcement that happened on June 11th that was already reversed from Super Rare Games. Super Rare Games is a company that came on the heels of a limited run, which is a game that would do a smaller physical release of an indie game that was only digitally available.
Yes.
There's a few of these. There's like Strictly Limited. You told me the name of one.
Strictly Limited, Special Reserve, Super Rare. They all have incredibly incredibly creative names.
Yeah, it's like Limited Run had the good name, and they the dollar store version of all of the Limited Run name, basically. So they had an announcement that was not met with a lot of positive news. They announced something that was a new label for physical only games.
Super Rare Shorts
Super
was what it was going
rare
to
be. Shorts. So exclusive games never released digitally, only available physically once for anyone that wants them in month-long windows.
So, I mean, where to start? That's a shitty, bad, awful idea. And what they basically did was they funded these small micro games. And then they were going to sell them to you. Immediately, everyone saw this for what it was, which is a it's naked pandering to the scalper collector market.
You're manufacturing scarcity.
You're manufacturing scarcity, and you're somehow expecting people to find this a good idea.
Under the guise of helping the devs.
Yeah. And they really dug their heels into that, too. But as many people pointed out, it doesn't really help the devs. Because these games are simply going to be collected, never opened, kept sealed, used as bargaining chips, and essentially just vehicles for monetary transfer. That's all these would ever be. Most people buying these were not going to open them. Or they'd buy two, open it, play the game for 30 seconds, and that would be that. That's not going to get a dev's name out there. That's not going to get a dev talked about, especially not positively. Out in the market, it turns them into collectible tokens.
Most importantly, no one's going to play the game.
No, yeah, exactly.
Like, no one's going to play the game you work on.
Right, because most people are going to keep these sealed. To me, it's just totally perverting what Limited Run had done. In Limited Run, they did not, you know, I had issues initially. We all kind of did. The no open pre-orders, you know, the things were hard to get, and it really turned a lot of people off. Limited Run did a lot of work to kind of turn that image around, to be seen as consumer friendly, to offer these open pre-order windows.
Sure.
And they've done a great job at it. They are loved by most people who play games and collect games. I enjoy what they do. They are loved by most devs that give them an opportunity to get a game out there physically that they wouldn't ever see. Limited Run is doing this right, and they're doing a great job. And then to have a company that was formed to essentially mimic and copy what they were doing.
Which would also
then
help preservation of games,
right,
too.
Preservation of games. And then totally pervert it and be like, money, money, money. That's all it is. And I don't care how many times I try to defend it. I know they reversed it, but to me, it does. It leaves a bad taste in my mouth, because you should not have had to receive the backlash you did to realize that this is just naked. It's money grabbing.
So part of their original statement is like, we're proud of what we've done for indie developers, collectors, and gaming preservation, and we'll continue to do with our line of super rare games physical releases. Here's the deal. When you talk about...
You're appealing to the worst aspects of the collector market.
When you talk about game preservation... Yes, having it on physical helps with game preservation. But if you're having it in such a small amount of people's hands with no digital release, you're actually hurting the chances of it getting preserved over time. That's what's so perverted about it. It's the fact that when you had a digital game with no physical release, that was bad. It's almost just as bad to have a physical game that is going to be only hoarded with no digital release. Because then not only you get into a weird situation where it's hard to get a hold of, even access. But then, yeah, it's a weird scenario that I'm shocked a company like this would even tiptoe into.
I'm not shocked.
I'm kind of shocked, because it's like, it's so bad on its surface. How do you even try to spin that to be something positive for either game preservation or for the devs, because the devs are not making money as much. If I have a brilliant game that's digital or that I made, I want as many people to play it as possible. Yes. A physical release will spotlight it, but if it's not on digital, you're capping off like 90% of the gaming market that might never find it. Like, that's insulting to me as a game dev. If the guys is that you're helping me as a dev, but that's obviously not what the goal was.
No, and I mean, like, I don't want to take any personal shots. I'm glad they reversed this, but I'm sorry, I cannot see this as anything other than them trying to get away with a scheme to make money from the worst parts of video game culture and video game collectors.
Shorts can be anything from entirely from the ground up original titles by up and coming or veteran indie developers, finished versions of promising prototypes or smaller scope games, vastly different and more definitive versions of promising titles that struggle to get the spotlight, or even expanded jam games from larger internal studios. Multiple Shorts games are currently in development. So they want to throw out a net of whatever games that either couldn't make it as a digital game or were tossed aside, and they wanted to then constrain it to a physical media for a short amount of time and make sure that all the collectors buy, because they know, oh, this is going to be available for only a month. We're going to buy them all. And people might want it. Because what if one of those games blew up? If one of those games blows up and you can't find it anymore, then yes. Oh, my copy I bought for $50, now it's going for $400. They're tapping into that mindset with this sort of project.
Yeah, they're tapping into the FOMO shelf collector sealed game mindset. And it's gross.
So there was major backlash.
Huge.
Immediately.
No one liked this. I don't think they had a single person who could have swayed this positively for them come to their bat. And they had a lot of prominent people. I think a lot of people were biting their tongue, but flat out being like, this is not great. I believe Josh from Limited Run had measured words to say about it.
He didn't call him directly, but he addressed it.
Measured words, yeah. About it. Kelsey Lewin from Video Game History Foundation was not pleased about it. I mean, a lot of people were like, no, this is... And I'm glad people called them out.
Yeah.
This is dog shit. And this, I'm glad the video game community is kind of policing its... what's the word I'm looking for? God, I hate this.
They're basically the scene or the community.
Yeah, they're policing the scene. They're policing the community, and they're cleaning this sort of stuff up.
The biggest response was, I feel bad for Glass Revolver. That's the game announced. Now only 5,000 people in the world will ever play their game. If that, you call this preservation? Do you know the definition? I'm disappointed I've bought anything from you. I love physical, but I don't love arbitrarily limiting stock for profit. And again, these aren't games that will be digitally released. So it's like, if I wanted to play it, now I got to get in that tight window to even discover the game. They responded, these small scope games only exist because we have funded them. They would never exist at all or see the light of day otherwise. It allows indies to make something cool over a short period that they otherwise never could and help fund their next project. Awesome. Release it digitally as well. Then release it digitally as well.
Well, before we sound like we're purposely hiding the fact that they've changed us, they did.
They did.
They did change
us. But the whole point is, like, it's so transparent. It's like,
it was just a bad idea.
You can still fund a game and have your limited small physical release, but then release it digitally as well. You're not harming anything, but except what you think would the profit would be to get the interest in that game. It's so transparent.
So they came out and said, you know, we're sorry, we're going to change this. We didn't take some things into account. I feel like you took all of it into account. I mean, you don't get this far without thinking about that. So what they're doing is, and honestly, if this had been what they had said they were doing from the start, I would very much look at this and be like, this is not for me, but whatever. Still don't love it, but whatever. So what they're doing is, the pre-order window is, I believe, 6 weeks. That is a generous pre-order window now. You can order as many as you want. 6 months after the game comes out, it will get a digital release on itch.io, which is...
which you don't know, that's more like digital game Etsy, so to speak. It's like more open...
It's indie... I mean, it's hard to say because Steam carries a lot of indie games, but it's indie Steam.
Sure.
It's indie Steam. There's no DRM. That's the big thing.
Sure.
There's no DRM attached to it, whatever. Once you download the file, it's yours. So I think that's one of their big reasons for doing it.
They don't take as big a cut as Steam as, I don't think.
Probably
right?
not.
It's probably much smaller.
So there you go. The games will be preserved. People who want to give them, who want to play them without buying into them sight unseen will be able to.
There's a timed release, which I'm not in love with, but okay. You want to protect your investment, finding these games, make sure everyone buys the physical. I sort of get that. The itch.io thing I think is interesting, though, because it's still not going to be able to be found by accident by a lot of people by not putting it on the mainstream stores. Like, why not do it everywhere? But okay, it's better than nothing. You know, it's like a half concession.
Yes.
Basically.
So I'm happy. I'm happy they listened. I'm happy they changed it. I still can't help but feel kind of grossed out by the whole thing.
Sure, because they could have got away for it. Wasn't for us dirty,
It should have never gotten to that point.
No.
And it's one of those things where it's like, now, okay, well, you're reversing it because you got caught.
Yes. Like, they, if they,
I think they would have seen, huge margin decreases in terms of their, like, people were angry.
Sure. Because it's the worst case scenario of all this.
Yes.
It's like the reverse
of it. It's everything we talk about being shitty in video games coming to a head.
Sure. Absolutely. So, yeah, but they did the right thing. But again, it's almost like, sorry that I got caught, but, you know, it's sort of like, you know, you shame the company to doing the right thing. I guess it's a net positive. And no one would probably try this again. No one. No one. We'll try to do that again. I can't imagine doing something like that. And just, you know, I can't imagine being a game dev that would want to do this either. If I have a brilliant game and now you're just shuttering it behind these arbitrary doors that no one could open up and see my game.
Someone else is doing it, though, and that's something
there is?
Devolver Digital is doing a physical-only Switch game called Demon Throttle. I saw that coming up. But I have a feeling at this point we're probably going to see none of this going forward.
So they're going to try, and that's not going to be digital?
I don't know if this has been changed, but basically digital downloads become the most common way to buy games, blah, 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 blah. Demon Throttle looks to be a cool top-down action. You won't be able to download it. You'll only be able to get it through Special Reserve.
It's one of the other companies?
Yes. Yeah. And I don't know if that's going to get changed. But I'm not just going to try to call out Super Rare. I love Devolver, but I think this is, once again, a shitty, bad idea that only plays into the worst aspects of video game collecting.
Is that open pre-orders at least? Or
I'm assuming it is, yes.
If it's open pre-order, it's open pre-order for June till October. Well, all right, so you get a larger release.
You get a large window, but still, I'm really not into that idea. And as I think it was Kelsey who pointed it out. No real fault to Limited Run here. I understand that they're doing what they can. And it's open pre-orders. All I'm getting at is open pre-orders have not been shown to greatly reduce the price of these games if they get popular later on. There are lots of those Switch games that Limited Run release that are still expensive, even with open pre-orders. So all I'm trying to get at is open pre-order without a digital option does not excuse them.
Sure. With no digital releases, try to temper it. Oh, I actually want to play.
That does not excuse them.
Okay. Well, hopefully this has not become a bigger thing, because then it's a larger issue at that point. All right, Ian, we got a Patreon.
We do.
How do you access a Patreon? You're sitting up very tall right now.
I'm hot. Patreon.com/CU podcast.
Oh, I'll say. What do you access? What do you get there on the good old Patreon?
Writing, which I should probably do today. It was a busy week.
A monthly hangout that Ian will probably do this weekend.
Probably this weekend.
Yeah.
And you get the full video podcast.
And you can also vote on a topic.
Poll topics.
In second place, retro games / consoles we're getting selling. Oh. And in first place, 62%. Are we past the point where, in quotes, fake retro consoles, VCS, Amico, Chameleon, are seen as viable? I'm guessing viable for the market or for consumers to survive and to thrive.
I think we are mostly over that, yes. The Amico is really going to tell the tale of the end of this sort of vanity project that we saw, you know, attempted and failed with the Coleco Chameleon.
VCS was not really a vanity project because it's done by people that bought the IP to make money off of the Atari.
Atari is very small. I still feel like it's a vanity project.
No, I don't think those guys give a shit about Atari. They just want to make money off
sure.
it. You know what I mean? Like, that's why I say it's not totally a vanity project.
Okay. You know. They wanted to make something that they tried to, you know, they tried to get it to appeal to retro gamers and collectors. It's out. There's nothing coming out for it. I mean,
I'm not sure they're making more of them. You know, like it's like, oh, it's a decent computer.
Well,
for
from
the
what
price.
I understand, I understand there are still people waiting on them, and it's supposed to be, or like July is the official launch or something like that.
I mean,
that.
That's the best thing to say about the VCS. Like, it came out, and from what I hear, it's a decent computer for the price if you want to use it as a computer. Like, that's basically what you get out of it. Yeah, that's it.
It's just. We've gotten to the point where these things launching is supposed to be reason for celebration. And it's like, no, you actually have to have a successful lifespan afterwards. If we all can sit here and make fun of the Wii U, and we absolutely can.
And that sold 10 million.
And that sold 10 million, million and had, you know, 5 years under, or 4 years, 5 years
four
under
years?
Its belt. 4 years under its belt. I'm not trying to laud it, but I'm just saying, like, that was a huge failure, and it did more than get out of the gate.
Yeah.
I'm sick of these people patting themselves on the back for getting something out of the gate and onto store shelves. That's not the end of it.
Yeah.
Polymega. We have no idea what the hell's going on with Polymega right now. They're not talking. The Amico. And then the one that we saw that kind of worked, and I'll get into that in a minute, Evercade.
But when I say fake retro, this is what I mean. Like, the Evercade plays real games that existed back then.
Right, and that's what I'm going to get at.
It's not fake retro.
Right.
That's a retro console. That's like saying, like, the NES Mini is a retro console because it plays retro games in that aspect.
So that is, right. So that's where I was going to make the differentiation. The difference with the Evercade is... it's affordable, and it's focusing on games that already exist. It's putting together compilations. People can collect cartridges. And because its main market is just these compilations, there is still room for modern homebrew to get releases on Evercade. Like Xenocrisis. There's that Xenocrisis, and I think it's called Tanglewood Double Pack. Those are modern games that got cartridge releases on that system because that's not what it's focusing on. I think systems like... the Intellivision, Amico, the Atari VCS, and the failed Coleco Chameleon. I think we are probably going to stop seeing people attempt to make these fake retro systems that are going to have suddenly their own ecosystem of original exclusive games. We're not going to get it's not going to happen. There's the Ouya did it or tried to do it. There's just no money.
Well,
they
tried to get the whole independent gaming scene when it was hot. They tried to, it wasn't fake retro. It was just.
No, but I mean, same sort of thing. These people trying to sell these consoles on the idea that you're going to get this new set of games that you're not going to be able to play elsewhere. It's just not going to happen.
There's lots of reasons for that. It's hard. The gaming market's so segmented and hard to tap into directly. But when it comes to the quote-unquote fake retro stuff, it's like we have the real retro games already. We have multiple ways to play NES games, Super Nintendo games, officially and unofficially, ColecoVision games, Atari games, Intellivision games. There's all the flashbacks. There's all the mini consoles. There's ways to fill that nostalgia hole in your heart already without constructing an ecosystem and a gigantic project for profit in order to trick people into thinking you're going to feel like you were back in 1982 with this new shiny project when they can feel that same way with pre-existing shit, right? You can feel that way already.
Right.
But let's
feel that way.
They're trying to artificially inflate like the fucking Dig Dug pump, artificially inflate more nostalgia into you versus the original feeling you had playing those games, because you can get that feeling again playing those games. We're going to give you a shiny new version of that somehow, and that's going to make you feel better.
Here's an object that you need to buy that is branded with a name that you liked when you were younger.
But not the one you had when you were younger. That's what's so weird about it. It's like, it's not the same one. It's a new version of that.
Right.
It's perverting nostalgia in a weird way.
Right. What it comes down to is when these things get announced, like, and I'm really not trying to make this just an Intellivision segment again, but when like the Atari VCS got announced or the Intellivision got announced, what are the things people always say? I can't wait to play these old games, not realizing that that's not what these things are for.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but it's what people want to the point where, Atari puts the retro game collection on their system. But that's not... They're trying to get your nostalgia, but they're not selling you the stuff that you're actually nostalgic for.
Yeah. So if you wanted to tap into someone's nostalgia, I'll give you exactly what you had. I'll give you, say if you're a ColecoVision fan, say you like the Odyssey 2, I'll give you a mini Odyssey 2 with Casey Munchkin, and Quest for the Rings and the other three or four Odyssey 2 games that probably people still care about. Like, I'll give you those games.
Right.
And I'll put you in I'll give you a little HDMI console, plug and play. There you go. That's nostalgia.
And that's what the market has shown to accept.
That's what you want. That's what we get. They've sold how many probably Atari flashbacks over the past 15 years?
Between flashbacks, Genesis minis, Nintendo classics, and things like that. That is what the market has shown to accept. That is what satisfies the itch for those people.
Yeah. There's no market for new nostalgia. It's so weird because it goes against the definition and feeling of what it is. Because you're no longer in that time span. You're now... here trying to like mishmash time periods.
And you also don't need anything special to play those games, even if that is what you want. They play just as fine on a PlayStation 4 as they do on an Atari VCS.
And great point. If you want to fill that nostalgia hole with new versions of that old shit, there's probably so many indie games and app and free apps and stuff that you like, the dollar Switch games, that are probably close to what these consoles were looking for to begin with.
Right.
So it's like, it's all covered. You just got to find it.
So you can either take any of your existing stuff and find what you're looking for, or you can somehow be convinced that you need to buy a new retro system, and you have to believe it's going to be successful. That's what these companies are trying to reinvent the wheel. They're trying to do this from the ground up in an era where there's no reason to do that. You don't need to buy into the Atari VCS to get access to games that are going to be on to get access to games like what would be available on the VCS. They're all over the eShops everywhere. Sure. eShop, PlayStation Store, Microsoft Store. Steam is lousy with them.
They're lousy with them, meaning that's an old term for that has tons of them.
Yes.
Like nice 1930s term.
Yep.
But then I watched my Three Stooges stuff. Example, not to pick on the Amiga, but because it's so easy. It's like boxing a four-year-old. But the game Snafu, or like Tron Light Cycle game sort of thing, where like there's a billion of those types of
games. I don't need the name brand.
Yeah. There's a billion of those games that have been made over the past 40 years. Simple, you got a snake trail, left, right, up, down, you hit the next thing, your tail grows bigger, don't hit your tail, don't knock into something. Like that's,
you don't need to pay $250 US fucking dollars to buy into an ecosystem to play that game.
To be accepted into the club to then buy the game.
Yes.
We're past that.
You can just go buy the game.
We're past that point. We're past it. And we would have saw maybe this not happen if the Coleco Chameleon came out and was a spectacular failure, but we're going to see it happen either way, because now you're running out of properties to mine. Like, I don't think you can. You got the Atari, television, Coleco tried. No one gives a shit about the Coleco stuff. That's not a name anymore. We're about done with this stuff, I think, after that, right?
I think so. I hope so.
I think.
To touch on something you said, I almost wish that Coleco had done well enough to get released, because, like you said, the problem with the Coleco Chameleon was it failed before release, so that there are people out there, and we've seen a lot of people who insulted the Chameleon go to bat for things like the VCS and the Amico.
Which is insane, especially for the Amico.
Which is insane. But
especially on Atari.
They have talked themselves into,
this is going to be different.
This is going to be different because the Chameleon's problem wasn't
the concept. It was Mike
the concept.
Yeah.
It was Mike Kennedy.
It's like, no, the concept's horrible.
And we all made this enemy. And granted, Mike Kennedy was a cartoonish villain, but sure. It was the concept more. It was his ineptitude, but it was also the concept.
Sure,
there just isn't a market for it. So now they're convincing themselves, well, if we can just get one to market, it's suddenly going to do amazing. That's not how it works.
No. No, you can push and pull, but the marketplace will bear out what it bears out. That's the lovely thing about capitalism. You can't force a good product on the people and have them like it. They either think it's bullshit or think it's good based upon the price and the quality of what it is. But yes, I think the fake retro consoles are done. They're done, and not just done in terms of well, this will come out and not be a success, but we're not going to see. Then again, I may be shocked. Maybe we'll see someone try to do a fucking, I'm trying to, like a CDI remake. I don't know. But like I said, we're running out of viable ones. You know?
Yeah.
Sega, Nintendo, that's all shored up with companies that are still exist and have money. So Atari's done in terms of their try.
Yeah.
Plus, you still get the flashback sort of stuff. You still get like the one-off stuff, right? You still get the Atari. They don't give a shit. Atari. But we're basically done after this. So it's the trilogy, the VCS, Amico, and Chameleon.
The Holy Trinity.
All right. We got voicemails to go through. anchor.fm/the CU podcast. Leave us a short message. Make fun of my hair. Comment on Ian's lovely orange-yellow shirt. You can do whatever you want. Here's the first one.
Hi, Pat and Ian. This is Chris from Fort Wayne, Indiana. And out of curiosity, what is your favorite model of the TurboGrafx/PC Engine console? Me personally, I happen to like the PC Engine Super Graphics, probably because it looks less like a video game console and more like something you could unfold to play electronic battleship
with.
Yeah, it does.
But What are one of your favorites?
Yeah, Chris, that's a ridiculous. That's like, yeah, that's, when you look at that, you're like, is that a weapon?
We talked about that. Last week a little bit.
Okay.
That's right. How silly they look. I'm not a Super Graphics fan. I also do not like the shuttle, which everyone seems to love. The shuttle. I'm not a huge fan of it. I'm pretty basic. The PC Engine Duo R is my favorite. I guess if you want me to get real specific, I kind of like the RX a little bit more because I like the blue accents on the controller.
Sure.
Hey, Pat and Ian. It's Sean from Erie, PA. If you could please give a shout out to my brothers, that'd be awesome.
Hey, brothers.
Their names are also Pat and Ian.
Was this guy doing? Is this guy like on a vocoder? What's happening here? On a mixer?
I don't know.
That's why. What?
Shout out, Pat and Ian.
Their names are also Pat and Ian.
Whoa.
Both of you, my question is, do you ever find yourself wanting to play an original game cartridge, but for preservation's sake, decide not to because of its value? Thanks, and keep up the great work.
The value!
No. I mean, we played on the second marathon, we played both NWC cards. So, I mean, they're not going to get damaged playing them.
Not really. It's to play them, and I whatever.
A cartridge is not going to get damaged playing it. I mean, it's
kind of, I'm sure he means CDs and whatever too. But
it's not going to damage.
Yeah, I use my Sapphire.
Hi, Pat and Ian. This is Peter from Lethbridge, Alberta, Canada. Just a question about what do you think would be like the most ultimate new console, if you were to take up the reins like Tommy Telemico has, and what would your ideal console look like?
Well, we can't avoid it.
I have no desire to make a new ultimate console because it's just been...
Well, first of all, there's no such thing as an ultimate console.
It's done.
There's really no such thing.
Right, and at this point, you know, we're beyond like polygons, and we're beyond, you know, sprite, how many sprites on screen it gets. My ultimate console is a Switch with a few more third parties on it. Like, I mean, that's it. I don't know how to tackle that question.
The Switch Pro that gets finally a GTA game on it. I said GTA comes to the Switch, there you go. I'm happy.
Sure.
That's it.
Hello, Pat, Ian. This is Will out of Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Tennessee.
I wanted to ask real quick and get y'all's thoughts on video games in the public domain. And now I understand that we are many, many, many years away from any video games entering public domain. But it is the next major medium that will begin that transition. And I wanted to get y'all's thoughts on what the distant future holds for our favorite characters, such as Mario and Sonic, and what it'll be like when those characters begin to enter public domain.
I think the laws will be constantly changed to keep that from happening. I think, and I'm pretty neutral on whether that's good or bad, because copyright laws have constantly been updated. I'm looking at it right now. It depends on when something was published. So like, for example, Mario was created, he was created in 81. Super Mario Bros. We'll just say was 85. It looks like, for example, that would be the greater of the term specified in the previous entry or December 31st, 2047, or it's 70 years after the death of the author. If a work or corporate authorship, 95 years, there it is, 95 years after the publication or 120 years from creation, whichever expires first. So there'll be another Super Mario Brothers game that can be made potentially that's 2080. That's probably what you're looking at. Right, that's what it looks like. But every 10 years they alter this, so there's a reason why like Disney was responsible supposedly for changing a lot of this, because it used to be a little more loosey-goosey on copyright. Because at first, what can you copyright? Books and music,
right?
That's it. And then all of a sudden you got the moving pictures, and then you have, you know what I mean, then you have a lot more things, then you get video games that pop up, then you get movies like and TV shows. And so they had to constantly be like, hey, what's reasonable? And I don't know. We're going to be probably gone, but there are some weird people I see that said like, they think that there should be no intellectual property copyright, that everyone should own anything. How do you own a thought? No, that's ridiculous. But we will get into a point in time, in theory, based upon the current laws, where any company can come out with a Super Mario Brothers game. I don't know what that's going to look like or that's going to be prevented.
Yep.
But that's going to be strange where you have, because at that point it gets so diluted where I think where then it's not, it has no, basically the point was at some point the holder can get no more value out of holding the copyright therefore it expires and anyone else can use it. That's what theoretically why there's a limit to that.
Okay.
You know, in theory, it's like, oh, we can't get any more use. I mean, Sherlock Holmes is in public domain because, like, oh, Doyle wrote that stuff in the 1890s.
Right.
You know. But, like, his estate can still try to go after you for some stuff, or they still want money. That's what it comes down to.
Say they do have some of that copyrighted or something.
Yeah, I don't know how they thought about corporations making Mickey Mouse stuff 150 years after Walt first penned. I have no, like, I don't have a good answer for you. I don't. It's going to be weird. Dogs and cats living together. next one here.
Hey, Pat and Ian. This is Chris from North Carolina. Wanted to ask if there's any music you maybe used to like, but totally cringe at now. Thanks.
Any, Ian?
No, not really.
I
probably have that in terms of, like, I'm sure there's probably TV shows or something or whatever that I probably used to like that I don't like so much now that I would find cringeworthy. But I'm fairly happy with most of the musical choices I've made. A lot of the stuff that I listened to in high school, Orbital, KMFDM, Nine Inch Nails, you know, Prodigy. I may not like some of that stuff as much as I did, but I can still throw that on and enjoy it today.
Yeah, it's tough for me to listen to the Prodigy nowadays. But
it depends. First two albums. I can't do Fat of the Land, at least not all the way through.
I could never do Fat of the Land. That was commercial crap.
Not all the way through.
No. But nothing I'm ashamed of. I used to listen to stuff. I'm not like, I can still throw on some happy hardcore. You know, I'm an old man.
Hey guys, Brandon from Michigan. My question for both of you is, when you're old and senile and living in the nursing home, what video games or video game systems do you see yourselves playing then? And more generally, do you think video games are going to be a popular hobby in the nursing homes in 40 to 50 years, maybe even surpassing something like bingo?
That's an interesting question. I think we talked about that before. Being that we grew up with this stuff, we would be more likely to play it when we're older.
Yes. The whole age thing was simply because when video games were introduced, I mean, video games are still very fresh. When video games were introduced, there was entire generations that had not experienced them.
Sure.
But lots of people like them now. We've proven by the fact that the target market for video games keeps jumping up by 10 years. It used to be kids, and it was 15-year-olds, sure. And it was 25-year-olds, and now it's 45-year-olds.
Gen X and millennials, yeah.
We're not going to just magically grow out of it. And simple pick-up-and-play stuff, games like Tetris, I'm thinking of old ones, but there's modern ones too. Simple pick-up-and-play games are always going to be popular. I could see something like a Game Boy. We hear stories already about old people who love their Game Boys and get attached to Tetris or something like that. That's going to continue. That sort of pick-up-and-play gameplay is going to continue to be very popular.
Yeah, I don't think I can't picture a 90-year-old getting into a game that requires 100 hours, but that might be a little tougher. Maybe to remember some of your faculties. But yeah, simple games. Absolutely. I'm with that right now. I'd rather play a simple game I can get in and out of in a half hour. Absolutely. Give you my mappy fix, right?
Ian, this is James from the UK.
Hi, James.
We really miss your Tales of the Video Game Store segment. We haven't had one of those in a while.
Wow.
But frankly, they promote all of the idiots that come into your shop.
Yes.
So do you have any humble, lovely stories about people doing nice things in your retail experience? Thanks.
I'm sure you do, Ian. Heartwarming tale.
I do, and I've told some of them before. But yeah, really, I'm just kind of trying to stay away from, you know, the podcast, the shop on here. It's just not worth the hassle.
Hey, Pat and Ian. This is Ox Bigley. Thanks for listening to my message.
What?
Anyway, just wanted to know, aside from the obvious, what are you guys into collecting, if anything else at all? Thanks a lot. Love the show.
Toys. Ian collects vinyl. I collect bad memories. What else?
I get into vinyl. I have a small collection of synthesizers. Yeah, that's about it.
Used to be into comics. Yeah. Do a couple more here.
Hey, Pat and Ian. This is Pat from Boston again.
Boston.
Ian, thank you for the recommendation about avocado in an omelet. That was quite good. I will certainly be doing that again. My question's for both of you. Imagine Sega were bought by another company. Who would that company be? Why would they make that purchase? And what would the future hold for both Sega and the company who purchased them? Thanks, guys.
So we get questions like this about these what-ifs. I can't wrap my mind around thinking about these what-ifs about who would buy Sega and why. And it's tough for me to envision this. I mean,
it's hard for me to do it quickly.
Yeah.
But I feel like, and I'm not saying this will happen, but Nintendo and Sega have been pretty cozy. Sonic has been in Smash. He's done the Olympics with Mario a few times.
Go back to the Wii.
I could see that. I could see, you know, some of those mascot characters from Sega interacting with Nintendo mascots. All right, but I just
it wouldn't be worth Nintendo's time to buy it though. It honestly, they have so much going on. It's like. It wouldn't make probably more sense for like Microsoft to buy them or
it would
Sony,
make more sense, yes,
or Sony to buy them. To be honest, there you go. There's the
like, we've really come up, really realized over the past few discussions involving Nintendo and their properties that Nintendo has more than enough on their plate.
They can't make money fast enough,
right?
Basically, they're not in trouble.
Hey guys, this is Aaron from Hungry Trilobite Podcast.
Hi, Aaron.
I have a question about the homebrew industry. Oh. Do you think it's more beneficial to have homebrew on a system that was very established in its time, like NES or Atari 2600, or a system that kind of found its audience later, like TurboGrafx or Vectrex? Thanks a lot.
You said beneficial?
Yeah.
To who, though? To, like, I guess to the console's life, or?
I think it's... I think when you release homebrew on a system that everyone knew, like the Nintendo, or you release homebrew on something like the PC Engine, I think you're still probably appealing to roughly the same amount of people. It's only going to be people who are super into that. And I feel like homebrew in general is not something casual people really dip their toe into. I think you have to be into it enough, into video games enough, that you probably have a lot of these systems. So it really just comes down to the homebrewer is making a game for whatever system they really prefer. So I don't know. When you homebrew something on the PC Engine, you probably are going to have a lot of rabid fans who want to pick it up if it looks good. I have to think that it's probably going to equate to similar sales for a homebrew NES game. There's only so many people who are going to be interested
There's tons of Atari and ColecoVision homebrews that come out. I can't imagine them cracking even 500 sales for the most popular one. I can't imagine it. I just can't. Because there's not a lot of huge interest in those markets. Huge markets there anymore. What did you drop, Ian?
It's fine.
Okay. I think I got rid of my drop here. We got one more here.
Hey, Tommy Tallarico here, sending you a message from my portable Amico, or as the trendy kids call it, my cell phone. Heard you guys talking about how you don't like VR, so I said, hey, you know what the Amico needs? A whole bunch of VR! Doesn't work with a lot of games yet, though. This guy on the team was testing it out with Caveman Ninja, and, you know, my dog started jumping on him, and he got freaked out that it was a dinosaur, and he fell down the stairs, and I got a lot of stairs. But he did sign a waiver that said that would probably happen, so, you know, whatever. Then we tried it with the darts game, and that was a big mistake. I'm not even going to get into that. But one game does work so far, and it's just for you, Ian. Uh-oh, it's Mahjong in VR. Boom! And whether you want it or not, I'm not even taking your stupid money.
Oh.
Actually, never mind. You can go ahead and pre-order that.
Oh, okay, good.
Oh, yeah, DeGrom sucks.
Hey, wait a second, Tommy. That's fighting words, Tommy. That's fighting words, Tommy. You can make up lies about meeting me and me kissing your ring or forcing me to kiss the ring or whatever the fuck or say my friends lost. You don't fucking go after DeGrom. You can say fucking I lost friends because of Miko. You don't fucking touch the goat. Jacob DeGrom pitches, I think, tonight or tomorrow, by the way. All right. That's all I got. That's it for the CU podcast, Ian.
It was a good one.
We had a fun time.
Yeah.
I have a lot of editing to do. These E3 ones are usually a little bit heavier.
A little heavier.
On the editing. Unless I get lazy and don't like cutting all the Nintendo stuff, but I'll cut it in because I'm a good editor.
I think a washer fell off of this.
Off of what?
Off of the...
Did you break my table?
I didn't break shit.
What washer from what, Ian?
Oh, the microphone. This thing came unscrewed, I guess, over a period of time.
Oh.
I've never touched this.
Yeah. Well, screw it back on, Ian. You're handy.
I need that washer.
Oh, okay. All right, we're done with the CU podcast.
We're done.
Ian's, this fault, we're falling apart here, the microphone. It's an expensive mic. All right, we'll see you later.